Welcome to Films from the Phantom Zone, your podcast about failed and forgotten comic book movies, where we watch a forgotten superhero movie and decide, does this belong in the Phantom Zone, or out and about for everyone to rewatch and remember fondly? My name is Arnaldo. I am your host. I'm joined by my good friend,
Birdo.
Birdo, what movie are we doing today?
X-Men 3, The Last Stand, or is it just X-Men, The Last Stand?
It's just called X-Men, The Last Stand.
X-Men, The Last Stand.
2006, sequel, end of the trilogy.
Sequel to X2, X-Men United.
AKA X-Men 2. and X-Men. Yeah, so we just did those other two movies. If you're listening to this, you haven't heard us talk about X-Men or X2. Those episodes are out. They were a good time. My wife Sable was on one of them. That first episode, I listened back to that whole thing. I really enjoyed it. We had a good time.
We're great people.
Yeah. We are just so funny. This movie is available on Disney Plus in the legacy section because it's not an MCU movie yet, I guess. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows what's going to happen
at this rate?
The Venom movies can be called MCU now. So,
Where are we on that? So, there we go. Anyway, so this is Films from the Phantom Zone. We're going to do our initial expectations for this movie, X-Men The Last Stand. We're going to do a little bit of background. I got a little bit of background. Just barely, though.
Oh, okay.
We're going to do our initial expectations. Did I say that? Then yes. We're going to get into the plot of the movie. Makes up the bulk of the episode. And then we're going to analyze the movie to the best of our abilities before we get into keep or cancel, the fun segment where we decide, are some of these people in this movie going to get kept or canceled?
Yeah,
pretty much.
That's pretty much it.
That's it. And then finally, we're going to put this movie either into the Phantom Zone to be forgotten, or we'll decide if this is worth a rewatch.
$5 if you can guess our answer before the episode's over.
Hey, you may not know. You may not know what I think about this movie. Let's get into it.
Oh, are
you
ready? Boy. Yeah.
So there's time codes in the description. So if you want to, you know, scroll right down on your phone app and then decide I'm going to jump around because I don't want to hear them talk about this particular thing, you can do that. If you want to be a dick. No, I'm just kidding. You can do that. Okay, let's get into it. Initial expectations, Birdo. What were your expectations watching X-Men 3? X-Men United. X-Men, fuck.
Whoa.
It's hard to keep it all together.
I think the first time I was really excited because coming off the heels of X2, X-Men United, you know, that ended on quite the cliffhanger. You know, we were like, oh, we're going to maybe find out more about Wolverine. We didn't really find out anything about him in this movie.
I think by this point, they were already greenlighting
the X-Men Origins.
Yeah.
I think so.
So I think that kind of covered that basis.
And then, you know, oh, what's going to happen with Jean and the Phoenix? Because, you know, she got drowned and then there was a giant silhouette of a phoenix underneath the water.
Yep.
The hell's up with that? So going in, I was younger when this came out. So I was kind of excited. I was expecting another smash hit, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of missed the mark a little bit.
I was in high school. So, like, this was kind of the epic conclusion to the trilogy. And at this point, we had two ongoing Marvel series, which was this and Spider-Man, when I'm this age. And they were both kind of ending at the same time.
Did Spider-Man before or after this?
After. So Spider-Man was 02, 04, and 07, I think. And this is 2000, 2003, and 2006.
Okay.
Something like that. And so these things that I loved when I was like early middle school, late elementary school.
They're coming to a close.
Like, yeah, they're coming to a close. Like this is, it was right in that age gap for me. Like, you know, very pivotal 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, from elementary school to high school. So I'm like, oof. Yeah, like I obviously like expectations were through the roof for this movie.
Yeah.
Like this was at the time the most expensive movie ever made.
That's insane.
It was very quickly surpassed by something else. I think it was Pirates of the Caribbean, like quickly passed it.
Oh, yeah. I can definitely see that. That was a much better movie.
Those were known for being very expensive. Yeah, expectations were through the roof. And I thought it was just fine.
Were you like, it's like a step down?
I don't remember what I thought. But this movie is very much kind of like, it's dragged through the mud a lot. Like, people don't like this.
No.
And so sometimes, like, if it's been a long time since I watch a movie, I'll forget what my own opinions are. And I'll remember what, like, the world's opinions are, like the internet's opinions are.
The Unimind's opinions.
Yeah. Seriously, though. You know, and I have to kind of like go back and be like, oh, wait a second. Like, I have a different opinion. That happened when we watched Batman. Because, like, if the Unimind, I'm glad you brought this up, the Unimind's opinion.
I'm glad we're using Unimind.
Yeah. What about Brainstorm? No, Unimind. The Unimind's opinion is that the Burton movies are way better than the Schumacher movies. We rewatched those, and I'm like, these two movies are kind of weird.
I really like the second Burton movie, though.
I thought you didn't like that one.
No, I like Batman Returns. That was the one I liked.
That's the one I didn't like very much.
That's the one I was like, I'm all about this weird shit.
Oh, it's too weird. I'm like, people don't remember. I think people like don't remember how weird it is and how little Batman's in it.
It's a villain movie.
Yeah. It's a villain like expose is what it is. It's so dumb. And then that first Schumacher's movie is pretty good, I think. The villains are horrible. Everything else is fine. So it's kind of like you go back and I'm like, oh, my opinion's different than all these people. So that's kind of one of the reasons why, you know, we do this. We rewatch some of these old ones.
We revisit and form our own opinions on
Yeah. Anyway, so you'll see what my opinions are this time around. But I was expected to like, I was like, oh, maybe I'll think something different. So.
Well, I'm sure worse X-Men movies have come out since this one. Apocalypse.
Oh, no, definitely. I've got a little bit of background here, but like, here's the thing. Some of this movie is based on the Phoenix Saga, right?
Like, loosely.
Yeah. And the thing about the Phoenix Saga is that it's a very long thing that happened during the X-Men comics.
It had a long buildup.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It was like, chunks of it happened throughout years. You know, between the time when, like, the Phoenix discovered her, there were retcons involved. Like, it's called a saga for a reason. Like, it's very long.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just kind of like, there's no, like, one issue you can read. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like,
you gotta go let me get like, a little bit of background. Various, like, eras of X-Men comics in order to get the story.
Yeah. With a little bit of Fantastic Four sprinkled in there, too. So.
Yeah.
So honestly, like, there's some probably like recaps you can watch or you can kind of read some things.
I'm sure if you go on like the Marvel Unlimited app, you'll find like a Phoenix Saga thing and it'll just show you all probably. The issues.
I remember I had a book a while back. I don't anymore. It was kind of like an encyclopedia on like Marvel characters.
Mm-hmm.
There was one on just X-Men because it's so
dense.
Big. Yeah, it's so dense. And you could go in there and flip around and it had all kinds of stuff in it. But like, honestly, like, I don't even know if it's worth mentioning. I don't know is there anything like about the Phoenix Saga that you want to talk about?
Just that, like, this movie doesn't really do the Phoenix Saga justice, I think.
Okay, but like, why?
Well, we have none of the cosmic parts of it at all.
I guess that's the main one.
That's kind of a big part. And also, like, we don't have the same buildup, and I don't feel the same attachment to Jean.
I felt some attachment towards Jean because, you know, she had her two movies and the most saga, quote unquote, that they did is, yeah, they planted these seeds in the last movie to be resolved in this film. But that's not a saga.
No, that's, you know what I mean? That's a character plot.
Yeah. I hope the next time they do this because
think they're going to do it a third time?
I don't know. I think by the time it's the MCU's turn, though, I think it's one of those things
they
that they're going to be like,
do the Phoenix thing, though.
Well, I think it's one of those things where they're going to say, let's plant the seeds slowly and we'll worry about it in 10 years. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like after a decade of seeing the X-Men in the MCU, now they do the Phoenix Saga. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Basically, Jean Grey was part of the original roster of the X-Men, right?
Marvel Girl.
But at that point, she wasn't very powerful. Like, she was kind of the damsel in distress character. And then by the time...
She was like Daphne from Scooby-Doo.
By the time the guy from Chris Claremont... Yeah, by the time he takes over, they start kind of planting these seeds. She starts going by Phoenix because, like, she has, like, this... I don't want to misquote it. That's the other thing. It's like, again, there's a lot of stuff here. I don't want to say anything wrong.
Like, this cosmic entity, like...
Yeah.
Enters her.
Well, she has a traumatic experience and she has some psychic abilities, but she wasn't like super, super strong. But then because of this like trauma that she experienced, it was like a friend's death or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like she had like this kind of explosion of like psychic ability, which the professor noticed. He felt it from wherever he was. And also the Phoenix Force felt it.
Right.
And so the Phoenix found her to be like a suitable host, basically.
Yeah.
But then basically years go by before it becomes a big deal. And it's not really unleashed until they go out into space.
It's like a Fantastic Four crossover thing.
Yeah. They go to space and then it finally becomes unleashed and then it's a problem and they got to fucking deal with it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not doing that any justice. But again, it's not really something that's like super recappable, you know?
There's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot, and it's through like various runs of comics. And yeah.
So do,
hard
I mean,
to keep up with.
Yeah, like, do yourself a favor. I found a couple YouTube videos that are like half hour long, but it's like part one and part two and part three, it's, so it's like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it them talking about it, or is it them like literally like reading the comics? Because there's some YouTube channels that'll like...
No, they talk about comic. It. They talk about it, but like, it's again, there's a lot of context in each comic when you talk about them like today, right?
Yeah, because there'll be a lot of things like, oh, this happens, and it's like, this connects to Fantastic Four issue 256.
No, exactly, yeah. Let's get into the plot. 20 years ago, a DH Professor X and Magneto arrived to Jean's house to enroll her in their school. The parents mention Jean's illness, to which Magneto reacts aggressively. Young Jean reads their minds and displays her powers by levitating all the cars in the street, along with the water coming out of Stan Lee's garden hose. 10 years ago, a young boy in a bathroom is caught by his father, cutting off his wings.
So this is a pretty good intro to the movie, actually.
Yeah, and well, I'm going to let you go on, but there's a lot of good stuff in this, no, surprisingly.
I agree that there's good stuff. Is it always executed well? We'll see. Mm-hmm. But this is one of those good things, though. Getting like one of those flashback scenes to give us a little bit more context on Jean.
Yeah.
They at least tried to like focus the movie on her character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We get our Stan Lee cameo at the beginning of the movie.
This is his first one. He wasn't in the last two movies.
Oh my God, he wasn't.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Like a Stan Lee cameo at the time wasn't like a guaranteed thing.
No.
Like he was in he was in the two Fantastic Four movies.
Yes.
But those came out after this anyway.
Yeah. He was in all the Spider-Man ones, right?
He's in Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, wow, I guess he wasn't in X-Men and X-Men 2. Huh. But yeah, we got our Stan Lee cameo, and then when it cuts to like the 10 years ago with Angel.
Mm-hmm.
That scene is kind of powerful.
It's scary, right?
Yeah.
Like, I get really, the knives in the blood freak me out.
Yep.
Like, they really freaked me out. I'm like, it just felt like I was hacking my own limbs away.
Yeah.
He had, like, it's every like sharp object he looking. Could find.
I remember when I was watching it, first off, I was like, that's the kid from Sharkboy and Lava Girl.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's like the main kid. My second takeaway from that scene was, wow, I used some of those tools in woodshop glass.
Oh, yeah.
And he was using it on his body. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, no. Like, when I saw him using that, because I know what that tool can do, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. On his body.
Yeah.
Gross. The de-aging looks not bad. This was one of the...
Looking at it right now, it's like, well, that looks fake. But, you know, in 2006.
It's one of the first times they had used de-aging was in this movie.
How did they do it? Because I know they didn't do, like, deep fake stuff, because that wasn't a thing yet.
No, they still don't do that.
Oh, yeah, they still don't do that.
Yeah. It's possible, but they're not using it.
They should.
No, they basically just kind of, like, pull their features back. They pull their skin back, kind of, like,
digitally.
Digitally, yeah.
A lot of times people look, like, airbrushed, though.
Yeah, it's a tough part.
And Professor X kind of looks a little bit airbrushed.
It's the uncanny valley, but yeah. I thought they looked good enough. I really like the flashback because you get more of... You know, that they're doing the school together. That it's Charles and Eric.
Now, this is a little in conflict with the later movies, but...
Oh, totally. That's kind of my other big problem. But it really... Okay, here's the thing. It's not this movie's fault. If you set the precedent, then you have to adhere to it in the future.
Right. The future movies kind of fuck things up a bit.
Ignore this movie. And there's other instances later on, too, with a couple other characters. They ignore this movie completely.
As good as some of those newer movies are.
But it would be nice to have some continuity. You know,
the continuity, I think, starts getting really fucked up with the Wolverine movies.
It's all over
the
place.
X-Men Origins Wolverine. That's when the continuity just goes out the window.
Yeah. It's all over the place.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Seeing Jean's powers kind of like start to come out a little bit. Even when she was a kid, they were already kind of like out of control.
Yeah.
Which is a little weird because in like X-Men 1, she's like not that powerful.
Well, they explain it that...
Oh,
Professor X has been holding her back.
He suppressed her. Yeah.
So at first, she's already super powerful.
So has she already been touched by the Phoenix Force at this point?
Yeah. And he explains it. And we're going to get to it. But like, I do like that Jean presents, and they didn't really explore it that much, but Jean does present this debate for their two schools of thought, Professor X and Magneto, where Professor X wants to live harmoniously with humans. And that means... holding back your own power, checking yourself in order to make the other people more comfortable. Whereas Magneto's the opposite.
Yeah, he's like, why should we have to do that?
Yeah, we should be ourselves and they should deal with us. And you see that right from this scene. Now, again, they didn't do that much with it, but thought is there, right?
There was definitely more of that done in the previous movies than in this
one. Yeah. Yeah, it could have been better. The not-so-distant future. X-Men are fighting in a fiery dystopia. Colossus, Kitty Pryde, Iceman, and Rogue are led by Storm and a very nonchalant Wolverine who is trying to light his cigar off a flaming car. They're being attacked by a Sentinel. Wolverine goes against Storm's instructions and has Colossus throw him at the head of the Sentinel, which he cuts off and falls back down in front of the team. Their surroundings disappear into the danger room where they were training the new X-Men.
So this part's a little silly.
I have so many fucking questions about this scene. Let's just take it from the top. Number one, how did he light his cigar off the fire that's not real?
Yeah, isn't that like holograms?
Yeah, it's all holograms.
But they are in like they can like feel things still though. The danger room's weird.
The danger room is supposed to have like guns and shit that fire at them. And then there's holograms and it all kind of comes together.
It's like Mysterio from Far From Home.
I was just literally going to say it's like the drones in Mysterio from Far From Home. And if they make a new danger room with a new X-Men, it should just have that.
Like, use Stark technology.
Like, they just steal it, and they're like, we're going to use this for training, yeah. So, he can't do that, and he knows that he can't do that, so he's being stupid by even trying. Number two, that room isn't that big. We saw it when the holograms turned off. In the cartoons, it's huge, which makes more sense.
Right.
But in this, it's not that big, so were they running...
Yeah, it's like a room.
Yeah, so like, how were they running around? Where did Colossus throw Wolverine, really? Like, wasn't that much space. Why are there Sentinels? Like, how do they know to prepare for Sentinels if they don't exist yet? Or do they exist? Have they existed already in this universe?
That's not this movie's fault, though.
But why introduce the Sentinels in a hologram
because
as a training exercise?
Because it's a X-Men staple. That's literally the only reason.
But do they know that, though?
Probably not.
They're like, all right, there's no giant robots that attack us in this.
Ratner was just like, hey, we're going to put a Sentinel in here because that's X-Men. I guarantee you that's how pitch went.
But like, why? It just doesn't make sense.
Technically, Sentinels were made in the 60s.
Okay, but first of all, we don't know that yet. And second of all, are we supposed to think that they fought Sentinels in the 60s? Is that the implication here?
I guess not.
It doesn't make any sense to me. and lastly, that Sentinel head comes down and does a full 360 degrees, and yet somehow Wolverine shows up behind it. Was he riding the Sentinel head? Because if he was, that means he would have had to have crawled like Spider-Man.
I think they just did a generic action scene for this.
But do you know what I'm talking about? The head does a full 360 degrees, so where was he? Here's the only thing.
Maybe he turns invisible.
He falls down. He just falls straight down because he fucking hit a wall. There's nothing there. He falls straight down and just walked forward, you know?
Honestly, I think when they wrote this scene, they were like, hey, don't think about it too much.
Ugh, I can't help but think about
it. This
is
one of those scenes where they're like, hey, don't think about it. It's just action. It's fun.
But why is he lighting the... That's not even one that's like, I'm thinking too much about it.
All right, think about who wrote this movie.
Actually, the two writers are quite experienced. It's Cal Penn and...
Then why did it end up this way?
And Kinberg.
Roberto Orci.
No, not those guys. Okay. Rogue is upset with Bobby after seeing him share a moment in the danger room with Kitty. Wolverine finds Cyclops, who is still depressed over the death of Jean, and tells him to move on. Cyclops hits him with, not everyone heals as fast as you, Logan.
That's a good line.
It is. That's why I wrote it down. That's a good one. I'm not sure how much time has passed.
Is it just a few months?
I wanted to say like 2 years.
Oh, like real time?
Well, yeah. And the only reason I think that is because Jean's hair grows very long. And the last movie was short.
Oh.
She had shoulder length hair in the last movie.
And now it's like
down to her back.
Yeah, but that could just be the Phoenix.
Yeah, but like that's an amount of hair that takes like years to grow. So that's why I thought it was in real time. All the same kids are still in school. So like, I don't know.
I feel like they're in school like forever.
Yeah, pretty much. So like, I don't know, maybe at least a year, right?
That's a fair assessment.
Yeah.
I wish they would actually like tell you instead of just being like, oh, some time passed.
Well, this thing is like, it's the not so distant future, right?
That could mean anything.
But the not so distant future from like the current day, right? Which means like, because I was thinking a little too hard about this. The 20 years ago, you can date that. Because if the movie is set in the not so distant future, that means it's all relative to the present, meaning right. 2006. So 20 years ago, that's 1986 when they went to see Gene.
Okay.
In 1996 is when
Angel was cutting his trying wings to hide, a, hide yeah. himself.
And the only reason I bring that up is because when we get to the fucking prequels, we're going to see how none of this makes any sense.
None of it all lines up. All the ages are different. All.
Yeah. Because, I mean, these guys are supposed to be, what, like in their 50s when they visited Gene?
I guess they would be in like their 50s, maybe early 40s.
50s? Now they're in their early 70s, but even that's too old.
Well, because Magneto was alive in World War II.
Oh, yeah, you can actually date him then. Then by the 86, he should be at least like 50. Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have been like a teen. Not a teen, but he was like 10. Like 10 or 12 or
and
something.
And that was in the 40s, like early 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Professor X is teaching mutant ethics and speaks of the ethics of using their powers over their human fellows. He shows a video of Moira MacTaggert.
Of course he does.
who researches a man who is alive but has no consciousness. He and Storm are joined by Hank McCoy, a.k.a. Beast, a retired X-Men who is large and blue and now Secretary of Mutant Affairs. He tells them of Worthington Labs, a pharmaceutical company that has created a cure for mutants using a mutant named Jimmy. A debate in the office ensues about whether or not a cure is necessary, especially for mutants who can't blend in like Hank or those who can't live a normal life like Rogue.
So the same Hank who was on TV in the last movie, not blue.
Right. Yeah. And we said that. There's a ton of continuity errors in
this. And now he's
films.
Being played by Frasier.
Correct. I don't know if you noticed this. In an upcoming scene, we meet Bolivar Trask, who's played by a black man.
Who is clearly not Peter Dinklage.
Right. For a bunch of different reasons. No two men looked more different than these guys.
Right. Well, it's almost like the whole like Two-Face thing with Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Like, come on. You go from Lando Calrissian to Agent K?
No, but this is like a 6-foot black man and like a 3-foot white man.
huge difference.
Yeah, big difference. But at least in that, like, that was an Easter egg. Like, he was on TV for a split second. We only caught him because we were looking for him.
All right. Do you think he created the Sentinels in this timeline?
Oh, yeah. Maybe he's like, all right, he already created the Sentinels.
He's like, oh, yeah, I'm wiping out all the mutants as we speak.
Yeah. I think there's something interesting here, and it's about Professor X's ethics. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a very interesting thing that the movie starts to do and then just doesn't finish doing. He is literally talking about the ethics of using your power over other people, whether they be mutants or humans. And he compares, he's like, the reason you can't do it is because you'd be a tyrant if you did, basically.
And you know what? I agree with that 100%.
But isn't that what he does this whole movie?
He's a little bit of a hypocrite.
Right.
But I think he justifies it by being like, well, if I don't do this, then bad shit's going to happen, you know?
But that's
like,
also
he feels like he's doing it for the right reasons, but
but that's also what tyrants are.
Yeah.
Like, tyrants, they have control over other people who do not consent. They don't have the consent of their governed, right?
Right. Because they think they know best.
And they think, right. Why? And they don't think they're wrong. They're not necessarily malicious. Mm-hmm. They think they're doing it for the right reasons. Is that not what
is Professor X a tyrant?
Here? Well, I think that's the comparison the movie starts to make and then doesn't really.
It doesn't run with it.
It fizzles out real quick. Yeah. But I think it's a super interesting debate here.
It's another one of those good things that doesn't quite get touched on.
No, I think that's kind of the main theme of this movie is the ethics of like mutants and humans.
Mm-hmm.
And coming from not only one of the most powerful X-Men or mutants, but like the most powerful one in the most invasive way. Because his superpower, you know, he reads minds and he can control people. And
how do you know if he is controlling you or not? I guess you don't.
And I would liken him to like, because it's, you know, when we talk about like mind control, whatever, it's fake and it's hard to kind of like grasp and debate. But like, compare him to like, if your superpower was like you had X-ray vision and you could see people naked and no one's stopping you and maybe no one knows that you can do it. But is it right?
No, you're violating those people.
And it would be very easy to say like, no, that's not okay because that's someone's like private parts. And like, you don't have the right to just see someone naked if you want to. Absolutely not. Right.
Right.
So like how is that different than like entering someone's minds and their private thoughts?
That might be worse. Actually.
Well, that's my point. Yeah. But it's like, I feel like if you talk about like Professor X's powers, they just don't seem as bad as if you had x-ray vision and could see someone naked. Then I feel like in that way, like, it's very clear cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah. This is a topic that really does need to have, like, a deep dive into it.
Yeah. And
it never happens.
It doesn't. Yeah. It sets up a very interesting thing.
And
I'm like,
no other movie in the franchise touches on it.
Yeah.
Maybe they're scared to.
God, I don't know. Jimmy, little kid, he's Leech in the comic books. He's usually green and kind of froggy. He lives in, like, the sewers. He's
gross.
Yeah. He can, like, barely speak English. Because he, like, was just kind of, like, raised underground or whatever. And, yeah, he can kind of, like, stop mutant powers from, like, 50 feet radius. So, like, if you're close to him, you got nothing. Doesn't matter who you are.
Right. I could definitely see how his power is useful for what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Angel, also, original X-Men. We talked about this.
Yes.
He has, like, two lines in this movie.
Yeah, and he does, like, a cool...
He's got one cool scene.
He's got one cool scene. And then he doesn't do anything.
Well, I think what's interesting is that they put him as the center of, like, the Worthington Labs is the company that creates a cure.
Right.
Because of Angel. But, yeah, like, there's so much potential there for all kinds of stuff. And they don't do any of it.
No. And it sucks because that could have been a cool little side plot going on in the movie.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a B plot that's two scenes long. It's a total of like 5 minutes.
You're planting seeds and you're not reaping them.
Yeah. At yet another abandoned church. I don't know where there's this many abandoned churches, but we've seen like
three. In the X-Men universe, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. No one's Catholic anymore. At yet another abandoned church, a mutant group meets to discuss the cure. Magneto arrives to deliver a speech that this is just another step in their war against mutants. What is a voluntary cure now will be a mandatory weapon later. He and Pyro attract the attention of a mutant gang with edgy as fuck tattoos named the Omegas. One of the Omegas, Callisto, can detect mutants. Magneto uses her powers to locate Mystique, who is being kept in a mobile prison.
So they're supposed to be like, does Magneto have a group called the Omegas? Or is this like Omega level mutants or...
Okay, so...
Omega Red?
The Omegas.
Or do they just want an edgy name?
They're a mutant outcast mob. Okay, so they're heavily inspired by the Morlocks from the comics. So I don't think the Omegas are a thing in the comics, but the Morlocks are. Callisto is also an amalgamation of two characters.
They do that a lot in these movies.
Yep.
Yeah, because when I look up like Omega and mutants, it just shows me the Omega level mutants.
Yeah. Which I guess is not a thing in the movies.
It would have been interesting if it was, although...
They're just like classes, like class there's only one like, through five or whatever.
There's only like three of them that appear in the movies, though. And they'll be like Jean, Iceman, and Magneto.
The character combined the powers of the comics Callisto with another of the Morlocks, Caliban, and is written to be someone who could be beautiful, but with a tough persona.
Isn't Caliban in the movie?
Yes.
I was going to say, like, Caliban's in, like, a couple of the movies, I think.
Yeah. So there are multiple characters that can sense other X-Men, or mutants.
Okay.
Apparently, the girl, Dania Ramirez, the actress, auditioned to play a mutant prostitute, Stacey X. But they were impressed by her, so they casted her as Callisto. Then Stacey X is not in this movie. But that would have been interesting, I think. What a fucking horrible idea is to keep Mystique in a mobile prison. Like, she's just like in a trailer.
It's stupid.
Holy shit. Especially you know who's going to come after her eventually. And you have no safeguards against that. Like, you should keep her in the plastic prison. So
yeah,
that Magneto
that
can never
he
get
can't
there.
Break in.
Yeah. Somewhere like locked away underground. Fucking keep her in a fucking car. So stupid. Holy shit. Okay. Scott... I still love how edgy they are. It looks so dumb. Like, that's one thing that does age this movie is, like...
It reminds me of the villains Omegas. From Elektra.
Yeah. Not as bad, but close.
Or the demons from Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, there you go. Knew that was coming. Scott visits Alkali Lake and hears Jean in his mind. He yells for her to stop, shoots the lake in frustration, and Jean appears. She takes his sunglasses off, saying she can control her power enough to hold back his lasers. They kiss... But then she sucks the life out of him. Professor X feels Jean's powers and sends Wolverine and Storm. They arrive to find rocks floating in the air, Scott's sunglasses, and Jean unconscious.
Poor Scott.
Okay, so I mean, this is how they write off Cyclops. Yeah. The actor James Marsden left this movie along with Bryan Singer and Bryan Singer's writers.
So it could be Jimmy Olsen.
He's not Jimmy Olsen.
I think he's Jimmy Olsen.
No, he's a new character.
Are you sure? In Superman Returns?
He's not Jimmy Olsen.
I thought he was.
No.
I also haven't seen Superman Returns in like over a decade though, so.
No, he's Richard White.
Who the fuck is Richard
White? An original character, I'm pretty sure. We'll get to Superman Returns when we get to Superman Returns.
Oh, Jimmy Olsen's the guy from Fanboys.
Yeah, he's in that movie. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
I remember him in that movie. I remember him and Perry White leaning over like the newspaper and going like, is Clark Superman? They're like, nah.
The only thing I remember from that movie is the scene with the plane and Kevin Spacey on the Kryptonite Island. That's all I remember.
That's like the beginning and the end of that movie. Nothing in between.
Oh, and the piano. Like the kid like pushes the piano or whatever. Yeah. That's it.
So it just sucks that he couldn't be more involved in this film. And like usually for actors, like depending on the role, but they don't need to be like as involved with the movie for as long.
Right.
They're all on set for like a month, maybe a few.
He probably could have done more in this movie.
He clearly did one day of shooting and then like fucked off to do Superman Returns. I'm like, I understand the director and the writers. That's a much more time consuming activity for them. They need like a full 2 years to make a movie. Like the actor, I'm like, I feel like they could have worked around schedules and gotten him like a bigger role in this movie because he gets written off very unceremoniously.
Yeah, for like someone that was a main character in the previous two movies.
Yeah.
And is kind of a main character in the X-Men franchise, period.
Well, even in those first two movies, I feel like they don't do Cyclops justice.
No.
He doesn't get a whole lot of play.
He's definitely my favorite character to make fun of in these movies.
But I mean, I like him a lot in the first movie. He has a lot less to do in the second one. And this one, obviously, he's not in it. So,
yeah.
And he's killed very quickly.
Is he killed? Because it's very unclear. He's just kind of like gone.
Well, they don't have enough time with the actor to like even like film his dead corpse. No. So like he's gone.
Just throw his sunglasses in the water.
Good enough. That sucks. I think this movie would have been a lot better with a lot more Cyclops, especially since how like the film is so gene-centric.
I think it would have been a lot better to have some of those emotional scenes between Logan and Jean to be Cyclops and Jean instead.
Or a combination, or all of them, yeah.
Or have Cyclops be the one that gets like torn apart at the end and kill him off that way. That at least has impact.
Yeah.
I should write an X-Men movie.
They should hire us. At the mansion, Professor X examines Jean and explains to Wolverine that she seemingly survived the dam collapse by subconsciously encasing herself in a protective cocoon of psychic energy. Yeah, right? That was a sentence. He goes on to explain that Jean is the most powerful mutant he's ever known. Her powers lie in her subconscious mind and is too powerful for her own good. When she was young, he placed psychic barriers in her mind to restrain her powers, which developed a split personality, the subconscious alter ego calling herself the Phoenix. Wolverine questions his ethical involvement in Jean's mind. Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, it's not ethical. And also, like, this is like what I was talking about before. It's like they completely ignored the fact that the Phoenix is like a cosmic entity. And they're like, oh, yeah. It's just her split personality.
It's also like of the age, too, where they're like, we have to make these movies much more grounded than the comics. Like,
but meanwhile, we had Fantastic Four movies coming out.
Yeah, but those suck.
They're fun, at least.
So I think this might be my favorite scene in the whole movie. I think this might be one of the better written scenes where...
When you find out Professor X is the real villain?
Kind of. And you know, that's the thing is like, Professor X has always been the father figure of these movies and of all these characters. And just kind of like poking holes on that and showing that like, yeah, he's not infallible.
No, and it makes for interesting storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. And carrying on to my complaint early on is that they set up a really interesting thing here with Professor X. And this is the follow-up, but then there's no resolution.
This is like a running theme with this movie, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is this movie needed to conclude this. You started it, it's here, and then this is it. There's no more of this. There's his death later on. But in that scene that we're going to get to, it's very short. There's barely any words exchanged. It just happens.
He just disintegrates.
Yeah. And so it's really not enough. Like, I feel like you needed a lot more to kind of wrap up this subplot here. Because this is the meat of the movie, I feel. Like, thematically. It's the ethics of what Professor X was doing to Jean.
Yeah, and it's a damn shame that this movie doesn't seem to recognize that.
Yeah, right? But one of the things when we were talking about the background of the Phoenix Saga or whatever, this is something that they took from the comics. Like, he really did put safeguards in her mind to
weaken her,
you know, control her developing powers, right?
And right. With good intentions, but, you know, that's...
Yeah, but again, does he have the right to do that?
No.
Like, it's such an interesting ethical debate that it's just not explored at all.
Yeah.
And in this instance, he basically created the split personality because the Phoenix Force isn't a cosmic entity in this movie.
No.
So it's 100% his fault.
He was literally just like, oh, wow, Jean's kind of powerful. Let's fuck with that a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah. But it also kind of confirms, well, this in the next, a couple scenes from here, confirms what we were saying about that she had a split personality in the previous movie. One is in love with Scott, but the other one wants to fuck Wolverine.
And that's clearly the Phoenix that wants to fuck yeah. Wolverine.
Again, that also would have been more fun had Scott been in the movie.
Right.
You could have explored that a lot more.
And also, like, since they weren't going to do the whole, like, the real Phoenix thing, they could have at least explored, like, the split personality thing a little bit deeper, and they didn't really do that much either.
Like, barely. At the end, like, there's moments where it's like, is it Jean? But, like, then she walks off fucking screen, and then we don't see her, and then cut to the next scene.
Yeah.
So, anyway. Warren Worthington III, now grown, arrives at his dad's lab to receive the cure. That's Angel. As he's being strapped into the operating table, he changes his mind, unleashes his wings, and jumps out of the building. And that's basically all we see of Angel.
I feel like there's something got cut there.
There's a ton of missing movie here, clearly.
Is it cut content, or was it just they didn't make it?
So, if you look at the development of this film, it's one of those things where, like, they set the date 2 years in advance. And they're like, no matter what happens, we're hitting this date.
That never works out.
No, of course not. And so, Bryan Singer leaves the movie.
I'm going to go make Superman.
And he didn't help write a sequel. Even though he had set all these things in motion, he had a very loose treatment for this movie. And he was like, here, do something with this.
That's a J.J. Abrams move.
Seriously. Seriously. And so, you know, they're like, okay, it's Phoenix. Great. That's all we got. And then they have to kind of write around that. And obviously, like, the fact that Cyclops left. Brett Ratner wasn't even the next guy. They had, like, a list of other...
Oh, Brett Ratner wasn't even their next pick?
Oh, no. Not at all. They had a list of other people, including, like, Zack Snyder was on that list. A couple other guys. I forget who. And then they hired Matthew Vaughn. Matthew Vaughn was the director of this movie for a minute. And he's the one who casted Kelsey Grammer.
I think that would have been really interesting to see.
And he left because he had a personal thing. And also, he ended up saying... They weren't going to let me make the movie that I wanted to make. Yeah, no shit.
Then he went and made Kick-Ass. So.
Yeah, right. And so then they landed on Brett Ratner. And by that point, apparently, they were so stressed for time that Ratner said post-production started on day one of filming. Basically,
that's bad.
Whatever they finished filming got sent to the editor, and they started editing right away.
That's so terrible.
They're doing steps 2 and 3 of a movie at the same time, basically. And that shows in this film. Yeah. We're going to get to it when we talk about the analysis. I don't want to skip ahead.
Kind of a miracle this movie got made.
Seriously. Like, seriously. But there is clearly a lot missing story-wise that they probably didn't film, is what I'm getting at. And that's the biggest problem with this film. Here's this whole subplot with Angel, and they breeze through it so quickly that he walks into the room and he's like,
I don't want to do this anymore.
He's like, all right, we talked about it. And then he's like, wait, I don't want to do this. And he's like, but we talked about it. Nope. And he runs out. You could have been.
There was almost no conflict there.
Exactly. Like, this scene should have been much longer. Like, it should have been a whole debate, a whole fight.
Honestly, I think this movie should have been about 30 minutes longer.
Like, an hour longer, maybe.
An hour longer.
This movie's an hour 40. It's very short.
It's short.
And then he just jumps out the window. Like, the jumping out of the window would have been a fun climax to a big argument.
Yeah.
Like, a big scene with a ton of dialogue,
yep.
A bunch of nuance to it, and that's how it ends.
And
then
it was cool to see him, like, jump out the window and fly away.
Sure, but it's meaningless when it happens so quickly.
Yes.
You know?
It's just like, oh, he just flew out of the movie.
Homeboy's gone. There he goes. Are we going to see him again? Probably not.
I guess he didn't get the cure.
Magneto finds the caravan that's holding Mystique prisoner. He easily destroys all the cars and releases Mystique and the other prisoners, Multiple Man and the Juggernaut. The guard awakens and shoots Mystique with a cure dart. She turns back into human Rebecca Romijn, and Magneto leaves her now that she's not one of them. News that the cure has been weaponized causes Beast to resign his position to the president.
It's kind of fucked up with Magneto because she still believes in his cause.
I see it both ways. Because at first, I remember thinking this movie, I was like, man, Magneto's fucking cold-hearted. But at the same time, he does feel bad for Mystique.
Right, but he's like, he just kind of fucks off.
He's so pragmatic that he's like, there's nothing left for us to do here. And he apologizes. He's like, I'm sorry, but I have to leave you now. Bye. And then he's like, it's a shame. She was so beautiful. And he's referring to her.
The real Raven.
Yeah. Right. It's a meme now, but like her mutant self, like not that she's physically beautiful being blue. What he means is like she was a beautiful mutant.
First class was good.
Eh, it's all right. We'll get there.
I said the real Raven. Perfection.
Perfection. So I get it, you know, like, but he thinks so little of humans that now he's like, you're not one of us anymore.
No, when that motherfucker gets shot with one.
Yeah. Well, he did kind of show thanks for her taking the dart for him.
He does. He's not.
He's just very pragmatic. He's like, we got to go.
Which is cold, though, especially in a moment like that, though.
I mean, he's a cold guy.
The world's made him pretty cold.
Multiple Man's just a douchebag, right?
He sucks in this movie.
He just comes off as such a douche. And you put him next to Juggernaut, and he's the douchey one? Seriously? Like,
Juggernaut kind of sucks in this movie, too.
I like that Beast has to resign, because this was not part of their agreement. That, like, they're going to put it in a dart and put it in a gun.
Yeah, he's like, I'm fucking done with
this. It was like, and earlier they have a debate about, like, the cure and whatever. And Storm's kind of the hot-headed one, but Storm is beautiful Halle Berry. You know what I mean? And Beast is like, some of us don't look like you. We're big blue hairy guys. Right. We get stared at.
I like this because this is one of the few things that actually does also fall in line with the later movies. Like Beast's whole like...
Oh, yeah.
Like the way he feels about looking the way he does. The fact that he wants to... He's not against looking like a human or like curing himself.
Right. Well, and we said this in the other episodes too, but like it's obviously tougher on the mutants that can't blend in.
Right.
Or live a normal life like Toad. Yeah, fuck Toad, though. But, like, you know, Beast and they mentioned this in the last one when Nightcrawler's talking to Mystique.
Yeah.
And they're, like, fellow blue people. But he's like, yeah, no, I get stared and I'm weird and, you know, I live in isolation. And you can look like whoever you want, but she's very confident in herself. And she's like, no, I'm just naked me, right?
Right. And it took her a while to get there.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, sure. She had to kill a bunch of people.
But yeah, no, I get it. Like, and actually, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has a really good storyline about the Inhumans that is actually kind of a parallel to this whole thing. Like with the whole cure and how some of them can't blend in and how like the government's like actually afraid of them.
Okay.
So it's a very like...
Bunch of X-Men
It's
threats.
Like X-Men adjacent.
What you mean to say is when they didn't have the rights to the X-Men, they just carried those themes over and placed them onto the Inhumans.
Yes, because prior to that, the Inhumans were just like a royal family that lived on the moon.
Right. Logan awakens Jean, who tries to seduce him on the operating table. They start making out and she gets rough. Wolverine realizes her alter ego has taken over and demands to know what happened to Cyclops. This brings Jean back, who begs Wolverine to kill her so she won't hurt anyone else. The Phoenix regains control and escapes.
When I was a kid, I thought this scene was hot.
It's a little hot. She starts, like, clawing at him, and he's like, fuck.
He's like, whoa, this isn't you.
Well, that's the thing. I think he's like, well, I can handle this, but at the same time, like...
Something's wrong.
Yeah, something's wrong with you. And this is what we were saying. This makes clear that the Phoenix is the one that wants Wolverine.
She's
while
attracted to power.
I think it's the animalisticness, like the raw instinct, you know? Meanwhile, Jean is... You know,
kill me.
She loves Cyclops, and she murdered him, so she's like, fucking kill me.
And he's like, I don't know what to do. This is one of the parts where they kind of touch on the split personality.
Yeah.
Sort of.
This is the most, I guess, they do with that.
Yeah, and they just made it a sexy scene.
Her eyes get all black, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's a good visual.
Kind of spooky looking.
Yeah. They go back to Jean's childhood home, where they encounter Magneto, also looking for Jean. Professor X tries to convince Jean to let him help her again and to come back to the mansion, while Magneto intervenes, saying she has nothing to be ashamed of and should be allowed to be her true self. When Jean begins to shake the house, Wolverine and Storm fight Juggernaut and the Omegas. Jean lifts the whole house and everyone inside. She levitates Professor X out of his chair, and to the horror of Magneto, she disintegrates him.
So would you say this was a nice parallel to the opening scene?
Well, so again, there is something there, but they don't fully explore it. Because there is something to this where both these men are back to Jean's house, and obviously that was the intention,
right?
To try to talk to her again, and this time they have very different stances. Whereas before they were in agreement, now a lot of time has passed, a lot of shit's happened, and Magneto's like, fuck this guy, he's trying to control you like everybody else. And Professor X is a lot more kind of manipulative this time around. Yeah. Where he's like, you need to come back with me. And at one point he's like, I can help you. I can stop you from killing anyone else. Like, killed Scott. He starts throwing that at her.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, it's a little bit cruel on his part.
But, I mean, yeah, but he's.
But also, like, he's.
He's to the point of desperation.
Yes.
That's the thing. And here's the other thing, too, is he made his decision. And again, all good stuff that's just not explored. He made his decision back whenever, and he basically created this monster. And so now he has to go all in on stopping her. He has to try and
clean up his mess.
Yeah, otherwise it's on him. If she destroys the whole world, it's his fault. So he's past the point of ethics because he has to stop Jean. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he was saying at the end of his conversation with Wolverine. He's like, I made this decision, and here, he says something to that effect. He's like, and he's like, now here I am with you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, he loses his patience with the Wolverine. He's like, I don't have to explain myself to you.
Which is very out of character for him.
Yeah, but it does kind of signify his desperation. Like, yep. That he probably does have some remorse with the ethical decision that he made. Mm-hmm. Because he's not practicing what he preaches.
Too. Right. And he is a good guy, and he's recognizing that, like, hey, you know, yeah. this wasn't the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good people can do bad things, too.
A lot of the action in this is really weak, like with everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, there's that part where Storm just kind of, like, she becomes like a tornado, like a fist tornado.
Yeah. Just the action throughout the whole movie. The, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Oh, we're going to get there. Don't spoil it.
Is that a spoiler?
Yes. Okay. It was a big deal.
Sorry.
You weren't there. You were a kid. It was a big deal.
All right. We'll get to it. We'll cut what I just said. And
All right.
You're right. I was a kid. I wasn't there.
You weren't there.
Although I remember people in the theater getting really excited when he said it.
Yeah, we cheered. So yeah, some of this action stuff here is weak. A lot of the action in this movie is weak, but...
Yeah.
The X-Men host a funeral for Charles. Bobby visits Kitty. To cheer her up, he freezes the large fountain so that they can ice skate together. Rogue sees us and leaves to seek the cure. Wolverine asks her to think it through and to be sure of what she's doing. Is this inappropriate? Is he kind of cheating? I'm referring to Iceman, Bobby.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Wolverine. I'm like, no. I don't think that was romantic.
No. Hanging out with Kitty.
Oh, Kitty. I mean, maybe. One of those things, though, where you got to look at it from all perspectives. Like, realistically, Bobby can't be with Rogue.
But they're together, though.
They're together, but they're not together.
No, but they are together. They're boyfriend and girlfriend.
Right. So, yeah, it's cheating. If Bobby was, like, having issues with the whole, like, you know, I can't, like, touch you or anything, he should have told her.
But, I mean, like, and I understand, like, platonic friendships and yada yada, but, like, it's the middle of the night, and you're doing this big gesture for her to feel better. You should have probably brought some other people.
Either brought some other people or, like, give Rogue a heads up.
Or brought Rogue and maybe, like, you know, yeah. Not... hold hands,
not make it seem so. Because is Bobby even like in the Kitty?
It's hard to tell, but the thing is, this is a very, again, another very interesting thing that they did very little with.
Yep.
Because
the fact that they did so little with it makes it super unclear and confusing.
Yeah, this is a very interesting love triangle.
Yeah.
And
it could have been
and they should have explored it a lot more. But I think the most interesting part is a part where Kitty's like, no, you don't understand because you have Rogue and I don't have anybody. And he's like, Well, I mean, like, you know, we're friends. And so he takes her ice skating. And so he's basically saying, like, I can be your boyfriend. Like, that's, I mean, that's the subtext. You know right. what I mean?
But, like, if you're looking at it directly, it's like, is he just being a nice guy? Like, to a fault?
No, I mean, he can be as nice as a guy as he wants, but they're holding hands while ice skating in the middle of the night.
True.
And he created that ice rink for her.
Yeah, has he ever done that for Rogue? Has he done anything for Rogue besides let her blow ice out of her mouth once
yeah.
when she absorbed his powers? But again, we don't see enough of Bobby and Rogue, and we don't see enough of Bobby and Kitty for yeah. any of this to actually right. mean anything
to us. It should have been explored a lot more.
Yeah.
And this whole, like, you know, Rogue getting the cure, and Wolverine's like, you better not be doing it for a boy. And that's it's interesting,
very fatherly
too.
Of him.
No, and that is interesting, too, because, like, is Rogue doing it for herself, or is she doing it for Bobby?
She might be doing it for herself in the sense that she doesn't feel like she could really have anybody.
Yeah.
But also, she might be doing it in the moment because she's like, well, I like Bobby, and yeah, right, Bobby right. wants to touch me.
The thing is like, I mean, and she wants to be touched, too. And
she, yeah, yeah.
She wants to touch people.
She but has needs.
She, but, like, she might turn into, like, a Mystique where she's like, fuck everybody else. I am who I am.
True.
You know?
The issue with that is she can potentially very easily kill a lot of people.
That's true. Jean accuses Magneto of being the same as Professor X, wanting to control her. Pyro tries to show off his allegiance to Magneto, saying he would have killed Professor X if given the chance, which offends Magneto, saying that his single greatest regret is that Charles had to die for their cause.
Yeah, Pyro's kind of an idiot.
Oh, Pyro's the fucking worst, first of all.
Yeah, he's been the worst since the last movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Since the first movie, and he was making a fireball in class like a dickhead.
By a different actor.
By a different actor.
But this is a nice spot to reaffirm, especially since, like, Charles just died.
Yeah.
To reaffirm Magneto's friendship with him.
Yeah, he loves him.
Is that they're still best friends. They're yeah. actively friends. Despite everything that's happening, they've always been friends. Right. They had a disagreement at Jean's house, and he was still shocked to watch him die. And he was trying to
stop
Jean. He was
upset Jean. To see that, yeah. yeah.
Pyro has a very binary understanding of their conflict, mm-hmm. where it's like, good guys, bad guys, whatever.
And he's very hot-headed.
Yeah. but Magneto is basically kind of reaffirming the nuance to their conflict, you know? Yeah. It's very complicated. It's complicated. It's complicated.
It's complicated.
Hey.
Hey. It's complicated.
Hey. It's complicated. Again, he's not evil, but he's determined. That's Magneto.
Yeah.
The team questions for like 1 second whether the school would stay open after the death of Professor X, and Storm takes up the responsibility of leading the school when Angel shows up seeking refuge.
Yeah, they're like,
so dumb.
So, is the school gonna, what are we gonna do about this? I'll do it.
Because you know what? It's a fake
issue.
Yeah. It's fake drama. It's like,
that lasts a second.
That lasts 1 second. It's like the movie, you know, at this point, it's like the writers are like, all right, well, we got to do something here. They're going to be stressed out about whether the school is going to stay open or not. Cool. But then they're also going to figure it out immediately.
But at least we got another second of Angel in the movie.
Yeah. And here's something I'm going to get into. I hate when movies think we're dumb and don't account for, like, travel time. Like, when locations are involved.
Mm.
This entire movie is set in two places, almost exactly. San Francisco and New York. And those are about as far of two places as you can get in the United States.
Yes, like opposite sides of the country.
Yeah, they're three time zones away. They're each like a 7-hour flight or something away from each other.
Not if you take the X-Jet.
Okay, take the X-Jet. What's that, 5 hours?
Maybe four.
It's still a very far distance. And it becomes more of a plot problem later that they glaze over, and it's fine because I don't care. But don't talk to me like I'm stupid. You know what I mean? Like, they're far away, and Angel was just in San Francisco. Now, sure, he could have hopped on a train. And
how fast can he fly?
There's no way. There's no way he can fly faster than a jet, and then that would still take him 7 hours.
What's the distance from Tennessee to Miami?
We're not doing this again. I did the math last time, and I proved that it's further than you think, is my point. And yeah. Angel cannot fly that distance, is all I'm saying. So it doesn't matter. So he took a train. That's not the big deal. The big deal is later on when 100 people are in New York and then appear in San Francisco a second later.
Maybe there's a mutant that can teleport.
Ah, fucking hope so. Iceman goes to the cure site to find Rogue, but runs into Pyro instead. They exchange words before Pyro attacks the site. Magneto issues a televised threat to end the cure. The president allows Trask to mobilize the military to defend against Magneto with plastic weapons armed with cure darts. Here's another thing I hate. I hate when the bad guy takes over the airwaves. If this was a thing, it would happen in real life.
I think it has happened a couple times in real life.
When?
It's never been like a bad guy taking over, though. It was like always somebody like hijacking like a signal or like a station or something. Look it up. It's happened.
You can do that locally.
It's usually local. It's never like
you can't take over like every channel on cable. Like in the like in all the movies. It's such a trope that this movie is just like, kind of like, you've seen this before, right? So cool, we don't have to explain it. Magneto hijacked the airwaves.
I don't hate this trope.
Oh my God.
Because I get why they do it. It's an easy way for like to have the bad guy be like, hey, I'm the bad guy and I'm threatening all of you.
I will give you some of these. I will give you when...
Man of Steel?
In Man of Steel, because it's a super advanced alien race.
Yeah.
And they show up on Earth and they're like, yeah, we can hijack all this technology. Boom, we did it. And we can do it in every language simultaneously. I'll give you that.
We did it.
There it is. But this, no, fuck. This is just silly at this point. Unless maybe, if there's a mutant that can do
maybe
it.
Maybe there's a mutant that can.
That's how you solve all your plot problems. Just one of the, this mutant, he
and
can
I
do
bet
it.
His name is Airwave.
I do like the scene with Pyro and
Radiohead. Ace. That could be his name.
Oh, Radiohead. That's a good one.
Anyway.
Iceman and Pyro. I like the scene where they run into each other.
I do too. Because they've always kind of had like a, even when they were like buddies. They were never like buddies. But even when they were on the same side, they had like conflict with each other. Yeah. Fire and ice.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like they were destined to do it. Yeah, that's good stuff. That part.
that part specifically.
Yeah, I like that part. Wolverine hears Jean in his head and learns where to find her. He single-handedly finds their camp in the woods and is attacked by a spike-throwy guy. They stab each other for a bit while Magneto is given a rousing speech. He finds Jean, but Magneto stops him from talking to her and throws him out. With information from Mystique, the military finds the camp and attacks, but it's just multiple men pretending to be the 100 or so Brotherhood of members.
Wow.
Yeah, he does something, right?
Is the spike throwing guy, is that supposed to be Spike?
Oh, I meant to look him up. I didn't. Hold on.
I don't think so. Because I think Spike's a good guy. And also, isn't he like, at least I'm going off of the X-Men Evolution cartoon. Isn't he like Storm's like nephew or something? Which is clearly, I don't think that's who this is.
Yeah, it is Spike.
It is?
Spike, played by Lance Gibson, a mutant who battles Wolverine in the forest.
He's part of the Brotherhood.
Bony spikes. Okay. Check this out. Spike is the name of several fictional characters.
Oh, of course.
They are not to be confused with Spike, spelled with a Y.
Oh, that's the good one.
From X-Men Evolution.
Yeah.
Nor with Spike Freeman, another character in groups X-Statics and X-Force.
Jesus Christ. They use the name Spike a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. In X-Men Evolution, Spike with a Y, he's the nephew of Storm.
Oh.
And he likes to skateboard, which makes him cool and a good guy.
Anyway, yeah, that was stupid. All the action scenes in this movie are
just
dumb.
Stab each other.
He just kind of stabs them, and then they run at each other. They stab each other because obviously he doesn't know that like.
Oh, how the Wolverine action is just kind of him like flailing.
Yeah, it's just him kind of like slapping people
and yelling.
It's again. I get how they were pressed for time because it doesn't seem like any of it was choreographed. At all.
They just did it day of.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, I don't know, man, run over there and just start kind of flailing
flail
about.
Flail your arms and scream.
You've done it before. Just do what you did before. It was choreographed before. Yeah, whatever.
And Hugh Jackman's like, all right, mate.
I'll do it. Arr! I do like the bit where, so he's giving his little speech and he doesn't want Jean to think he's using her because he said it, he wasn't. But yet he goes, they have their weapons, and we have ours. And he turns his head, and he looks at Jean. So...
That was just poor directing, I think.
You don't know that you're using her? Like...
She will bring us to victory.
Oh, God. Wolverine returns to the mansion to seek help, having learned that Magneto, Jean, and the Brotherhood plan to attack Alcatraz. The X-Men, now consisting of Wolverine, Storm, Colossus, Iceman, Kitty, and Beast, suit up and fly to San Francisco. There, Magneto and the Brotherhood seek a way to get to Alcatraz. They storm the Golden Gate Bridge, and Magneto lifts the entire thing to move the 100 or so of them to Alcatraz Island.
And he passes by a family, and they lock their car door, and he just smiles at them.
No, he locked the door, I thought.
Did he lock it, or did they lock it?
I thought he locked it. I thought that was the implication.
I always thought that, like, they locked it because they were, like, scared. And he's like, that's not going to fucking do anything.
Oh, maybe.
I guess it could go either way.
I got the impression that he locked it because he's not that evil. He's like, you guys are just civilians. You're not the people trying to cure me. Stay safe in your car while we fucking fight over
while
here.
We move this bridge that you're on.
And yeah. I have a million problems here. This is ridiculous. This is so fucking stupid. First of all, and we didn't mention this, Worthington Labs is in Alcatraz? What?
Yeah, who allowed them to set up there?
You want this to be like a good thing, and you put it in the site of the most infamous, maybe the second most infamous prison of all time?
Yeah, but it's not. You can go visit it right now.
Well, it's a museum.
Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, but what are you saying by putting the lab there?
I mean, that they just don't want people snooping around.
Okay, well, they're like, oh, we wanted the most secure place. Alcatraz is not the most secure place ever.
People have escaped it.
Maybe it was like 100 years ago.
Area 51 is more secure.
Any building, you can make it more secure than Alcatraz. Yeah. Like, that's...
It's just an island.
Yeah. It's
the
old,
rock.
It's an old prison. Yeah, you know what I mean?
James Bond infiltrated it.
Exactly. But why... Okay, first of all, what I was just saying about travel, him and the Brotherhood of Mutants, his new gang, there's about 100 of them, right? Give or take.
Yeah, there's quite a few.
They're all camping in the woods in New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
How did they get to San Francisco?
Maybe there's a time skip that they just didn't tell us.
Well, Wolverine goes back to the thing, and they're like, we got to go now. And they all get on the plane, and they fly to San Francisco.
Yeah, but that's only like 4 hours for them.
Exactly. How did he get 100 terrorists to San Francisco?
I don't have an answer for this.
But do you see what I'm saying? It's like...
Yeah.
And I get that it's like not important, and it's supposed to be you don't think about it, but like...
There's too much of that in this movie.
Why did you set it in
opposite
San Francisco
sides of the
then?
Country.
You should have set it in Boston again, like last time. And also... They flew to Boston, they came back to New York. That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a half hour, hour trip on a plane.
Mm.
Whatever.
Also, where's Ant-Man?
Yeah.
He wouldn't let this happen.
And then they get there, and he's like, okay, there's like about 100 of us, and we need to get to Alcatraz. So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to walk on this bridge that is way bigger than it needs to be, and I'm going to break the whole thing off, causing hundreds of casualties.
And just make a bridge to Alcatraz.
And make a bridge to Alcatraz. But why does he need a bridge to Alcatraz? What he needed was a platform or a boat. Why not just take a boat?
That's a lot less conspicuous.
Sure.
Unless but he was trying to be theatrical.
Their plan isn't to leave. I mean, eventually they need to leave, and then he can grab another platform. But all he did was create a bridge that allows the army to get on later and the X-Men to escape later.
Yeah.
So I see what they did here.
They did it because it looked cool.
No, they did it for the plot. Well, yes, that too. But they did it for the plot because they're like, well, we need the army to get there, and we need the X-Men to escape, so we need a bridge to Alcatraz. So he moves the bridge. But he doesn't need the bridge. He only did to serve the plot.
So him doing it makes no sense.
No, especially since he's supposed to be like an expert strategist.
But also he's the only one that would be able to move a bridge, so.
But the bridge doesn't need to be moved.
No, it doesn't.
He could have made a big platform with metal and they could have floated over like he did last time. They could have just stolen a boat.
They could have taken a boat.
There's ferries. Steal the ferry. You can fit 100 people on there.
Kill a lot less civilians that way.
Yeah, just say... Get off this boat. I'm taking it.
You don't have to scare the shit out of a family. If you wanted the gag, you could have a family on the boat
no.
and they like jump
and
overboard.
You see dozens of people falling off the bridge and dying.
They're
too.
Dead.
Like a lot of people died.
There was a lot of like, I've noticed in older, like mostly Marvel movies. Actually,
they didn't give a shit.
There was a lot of just like, just random collateral casualties.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they didn't give a shit at all.
No. Granted, it is usually the bad guy doing it. So, okay. It's not like Man of Steel where Superman's the one destroying the city.
He's trying not to, Burrow. He's trying his best. He's getting tossed.
Was he trying his best?
He's getting tossed around like a rag doll, and it's his first day on the job.
Was he trying his best, though?
Anyway. Magneto sends in the pawns, as he calls them, to attack the island first.
That's kind of derogatory.
Yeah, right? They get shot by cure darts and bombs that throw more darts in the air. Realizing that all their weapons are made out of plastic, Magneto sits back. The X-Men arrive in dramatic fashion and form a defensive line. Again, and it took them that long to get there. And they're on the X-Jet. Anyway. Juggernaut goes in to find and kill Jimmy. That's the little boy mutant who's...
Poor kid.
Makes the cure. Kitty goes after him. And he says his new catchphrase at the time, "Don't you know who I am? I'm the Juggernaut, bitch!" Before breaking through every wall Kitty runs through.
All right, so I was young when this came out. I remember people cheering in the theater at this line. Why was this such a big deal?
You've never seen this video?
No.
Oh, my God. Well, we're going to watch it after this. So at the time, there was a viral YouTube video, and this is...
Was YouTube around yet?
Yes, but it was in its infancy. So when YouTube first started, I was in high school. It was a great time.
Oh, and there wasn't really copyright shit either, because I used to watch episodes of anime on YouTube.
Yeah. So yeah. It was all like people just like putting up their own content.
Yeah.
Like there, you couldn't watch TV on YouTube. Big companies weren't on YouTube yet. No. None of that. So
it's whatever people upload.
Yeah. Bunch of great content came out that time. Like
shoes.
Shoes. Oh my God. Shoes. I remember that.
Hell yeah.
There was also Leroy Jenkins.
Yeah. I do remember Leroy Jenkins. Yep.
Great bit. And then this guy. So it was a guy who he was dubbing over episodes of X-Men with the Juggernaut in them.
Like the 90s animated?
Yep. Yeah. It's pretty funny. And basically, he's just like, "Fuck you, bitch. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. Professor X, fuck you. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch." And he just kept on saying that. And that was his thing. That was his thing. And the movie appropriated the meme, basically.
And this was probably one of the first movies to do something like that.
Absolutely. And so when it happened, everybody in the theater cheered.
I can't believe I didn't know that. Also, I was like an actual child, though, so that might be why.
Yeah.
But I was 13.
You must have just missed it then.
I probably just missed it.
I remember this thing. I'm going to link it below because I'm sure it's still on YouTube. And we're going to watch it after this, but it's a good time.
It sounds like the beginning of like the abridged series that they would do for like Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged or like Dragon Ball Z Abridged.
Oh, I don't know that.
They kind of just like do episodes of the show, but they dub over it.
And this was like, nonsense he was dubbing.
Oh, okay. Like those sort of follow a plot.
It was like he muted. No. It's like he muted the show and just made up his own plot. And it's all like,
bitch. That actually sounds hilarious.
It's like, bitch, where's my money? I'm the Juggernaut. You can't hurt me. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. That's the whole thing.
So this line is just a meme.
Yes.
Oh.
It's just a meme. So it's kind of like when Black Panther was like, "What are those?"
Oh, that was an old meme even by that point.
Yeah. There was another one that just happened. What was it? I remember talking about it.
In a movie?
Yeah, shit. I can't remember. It just happened, though.
Was it in Eternals?
No.
There's might no have been memes in Venom.
There was a meme in Venom.
Which one?
Fuck.
I don't think we talked about it on our episode.
Anyway.
Also, Juggernaut's helmet looks dumb in this movie. It looks like a rock on his head.
Also, by the way, Juggernaut is Professor X's brother.
Isn't it like his half-brother or something?
His half-brother, yeah. So he doesn't have...
That's not touched on at all in this movie.
No, not at all. It's also kind of silly. I'm like...
It's also not touched on in Deadpool.
Like, should they be related? You know?
It adds some depth to his very boring character.
The TV show does an episode on it, which is the bulk of what...
It was like that episode?
Yeah. Again, Magneto sending all the pawns in and then being like... Like, he's supposed to be, like, an expert strategist. And the whole chess thing, that's supposed to be kind of, like, the metaphor. Right.
But you don't throw away your pawns. No. They're supposed to serve a purpose if you're sacrificing them.
And he's also surprised that they have, like, plastic guns. Like, really? You're surprised?
They used this on you 2 movies ago.
Yeah, seriously. The Omegas try to kill Worthington, but he's saved by his son, Angel.
Oh, look, Angel's back.
Angel's back. Also, how did he get there? He didn't fly with the X-Men. How did he get there so fast?
Oh, it was probably part of his missing subplot.
God. He wasn't... And again, he was in San Francisco the whole movie. He showed up to New York to say one line and then comes back to San Francisco.
How is he like at so many pivotal moments, but he does like absolutely nothing in between?
But like, why? Could you imagine the real life implications of that where you're like... I'm going to get on, like, we live in Florida. I'm going to go to Washington State so I can
the literal furthest I could possibly get.
So I can burst into a room and be like, "Hey, I heard this was a place that would be nice to me." And then I'll be like, "All right, I'm going to go back over there where I'm from to be part of this. Because
I think my dad's in danger."
Yeah. despite it taking me several hours to get there. God, it just pisses me off. Anyway, Storm kills Callisto and Magneto. She fucking electrifies her. Magneto starts throwing cars lit on fire by Pyro. Pyro and Iceman fight. Wolverine charges at Magneto to distract him while Beast sneaks at him with several cure darts. Magneto loses his powers in front of Jean. The army finally arrives and shoots at Jean, setting her off. As the Phoenix, she disintegrates an entire battalion and starts destroying everything around her. Everyone escapes through the bridge that's conveniently right there because Magneto brought it there. Wolverine charges at Jean, knowing he will survive. She asks if he would die for them. He says he'd die for her. Jean momentarily returns and asks to be saved. Wolverine declares he loves her and stabs her to death, ending the destruction.
How does Wolverine know he's going to survive if she can literally disintegrate people at like a molecular level?
I know. I guess it's like, well, right now, he can heal faster than it. Well, he can't.
Because his healing is actually kind of slow.
Yes. But earlier, we see how she disintegrates people in a matter of like a second.
Yeah.
So no. I don't know.
So that part didn't make sense. And also, again, the only thing Wolverine does is charge at people and like flail.
In fairness, that was part of the distraction. Because Magneto's like, haven't you learned to not fight me? Like, seriously? And he's like, I have, because Beast is right behind you. Gotcha!
Gotcha! It's stupid.
Again, Magneto bringing the bridge only allows the X-Men to escape and allows the army to show up, because he's created a bridge.
So all he did was cause a bunch of casualties for literally no reason and allowed his enemies to flee.
Yep.
Which I guess ended up actually kind of saving his life.
Because if he had left the... Like, if the bridge wasn't there, how was the military going to get there?
Yeah, but would he have left if the bridge wasn't there?
Do another one of those little platform things.
But he doesn't have powers anymore.
It wasn't part of the plan. Like, the military couldn't take boats. They're made out of metal. Couldn't take helicopters. Made out of metal.
What about a plastic boat?
What? I don't have those.
What are those little swan boats made out of?
Probably wood, but still. There's enough metal on there that they can...
Yeah, he'll probably rip those pedals right out. And you're just floating.
The entire army goes there in individual swan boats. That's what you want?
You can take canoes. Like, I get it for the sake of the movie, but it's dumb.
Yep, pretty much. What else happens here? I did like the Pyro-Iceman fight.
I think that's the only fight I liked.
Yes.
And not even because it was like a good fight. It was just, it was really cool to see Iceman like in his full Iceman form.
I think it had the most payoff.
Yeah.
Because here's two characters they've been setting it up for two movies.
But all he does is they shoot blasts at each other. The ice is stronger than the fire, and then he like headbutts him.
But I think Iceman becomes stronger. I think that's what it is.
Because he goes into his full ice form and everything.
Which I don't think he had done up to this point in the movie.
No.
If any of them.
I think he does it one more time in Days of Future Past when he gets ripped in half.
In the future, he learns to become...
Does he get ripped in half or does he melt? He dies.
Yeah.
In the future.
In one future.
In a future.
In this, pretty sure this is the first time he like goes full Iceman.
It is. And it's one of the only parts of the whole movie that really have any like real payoff, I think.
Yeah. Again, Wolverine's mostly just slapping people with his claws.
And distracting Magneto.
And then we meet so many stupid mutants. They all have jumpy powers. You see how they all just start jumping? Why do they all have jumpy powers? They're all like jumping at like the towers. And they're like hopping around a lot.
How do they all have the same power?
It's just like a generic, I guess they're all the pawns.
They're generic mutants.
Wolverine gets in a fight with one that just kind of keeps on regrowing his limbs faster than Wolverine can slice them all off.
Which is an interesting mutant, I guess.
So he kicks him in the balls and he's like, grow that back, and runs away.
He didn't cut his balls off.
Yeah, he's fine.
His stomach's going to hurt for a little bit, but he'll be fine.
And we mentioned this earlier, this Wolverine being the one to like having to stop Jean would have worked a lot better if Cyclops was still around. They could have done a three-way thing.
Ooh.
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you
could get some polygamy stuff going on.
I mean, like in the fight.
Oh, that's what you meant.
Yeah. Like at the final confrontation.
I thought you meant like, oh, they would share Jean because she's technically two people in this world now.
No. I mean, like in the final confrontation, I think Cyclops was there,
yes, it would have worked better. And I also feel like if he was there, he should have been the one to like take Wolverine's spot in this final scene and then maybe actually kill him.
Yeah, all that could work.
Yeah. You get to write off your actor like you wanted to. You get a payoff. And then while Jean's distracted with Cyclops, that's when you can have Wolverine stab her.
Yeah, would have worked better.
It just would have had a bigger impact than Wolverine going like, I can heal really fast. I love you, Jean.
Yeah. I did like that. He's like, I love you. And then stab, 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 stab.
I do like that he really does seem like very upset by what he did. Hugh Jackman's a good actor, though, so.
I mean, the movie telegraphs it, too, because What's-Her-Face Storm even says, like, are you going to be ready to do what you need to do? Like, you're going to have to kill her. We all know it.
He does it. He only hesitates a little bit.
Yeah. Two more tombstones are added for Jean and Scott next to Professor X. The school, unceremoniously, really.
Like, all right, they're dead, too.
The school is open again. Beast is made a UN ambassador, and Wolverine looks out into the sky, I guess. He's had a scene where he's just, like, looking out into the sky. Like,
he's probably thinking about his origin.
Like, Ozymandias. Yeah. I wonder what's next for me. My solo movie?
Where did I come from?
In a park, Magneto sits at a chess table playing with his metal pieces. He tries to move one, and it wiggles. In a post-credits scene, the mindless body Moira MacTaggert was working with wakes up with Professor X's voice to her astonishment.
All right, yeah, what the hell was... Was that ever touched upon again, that post-credit scene?
I mean, he comes back to life. So that's how.
How?
He took that guy's body.
It's just, it's so vague.
And of course, it doesn't make any sense. Apparently.
Is that ethical?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
Is Professor X still the bad guy?
Yeah. So, okay, there could have been a little bit of payoff if he had finished what he started talking about earlier in the movie. Because in his ethics class, he was going to be like, here's an example. Here's my geneticist friend who...
Friend.
Yeah. They were on and off again lovers. Who has his patient who basically has a brain, perfectly functional body, but like has no soul, basically. Like he has no consciousness. He's a vegetable. And he was about to talk about the ethics of like transferring a consciousness to this body. But then he gets interrupted and he never says it. Like, we're left to just assume that that's what he was going to say.
I think it's perfectly ethical to take over this body.
So,
is it, though?
I don't know. But, like, it just kind of, they had good ideas and literally stopped in their tracks. Like, they didn't explore that at all. And then it jumps to the end where he's like, I took the body because I died, I guess.
But also, how is Professor Xavier back in his regular body at the end of The Wolverine?
Oh, because nonsense. That's and why.
And during Days of Future Past. Because nonsense.
Yeah, because nonsense. Because he looks exactly the same.
Yep.
And he can't walk again. It's how almost is like that this possible?
Movie just straight up gets ignored.
I think that's, yeah.
Like, this movie is not canon?
I think when you look at the whole big picture, you have to say this movie's not canon, and then it makes the most sense.
So Jean just died at the end of X-Men 2, and that's it.
Well, because if you remember Days of Future Past, they fix everything, and you see a future.
I wish we saw this future,
where too. They're all fine. They're all alive.
Cyclops is fine. Jean is fine.
Beast is there.
Bobby's there, being
all everybody's nice fine.
With Rogue.
So that's one timeline, mm-hmm. right? The other timeline is the Logan timeline.
The Logan timeline could be that timeline just further down the line.
Wait. I think you're right. The other timeline was the Days of Future Past timeline.
Right.
But...
I think the movies just make one new timeline after Days of Future Past,
but even then, it still doesn't make sense.
No, because there's characters that shouldn't be the AGR, even if they're in a different timeline.
Yeah, but even then, like they redo the Phoenix Saga.
Yeah, and so it happens way earlier. It happens in, like, what, the 90s?
Yeah, right. So how does that add? You know, a lot of things don't add up. And I'm fuzzy on the details, but we're going to get there.
I guess not a lot earlier. If it happens in the 90s, it's only 10 years earlier than before. Because this was, like, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Because I think Dark Phoenix is in the 90s, right? And Apocalypse is in the 80s?
67, yeah.
Okay. And for some reason, Wolverine's aging, but he's further back in time. Because he looks much older in Days of Future Past than he does
in Days of Future Past. It's really confusing, honestly.
When we get to those new movies, I'm sure we can try and deconstruct the timeline.
Yeah.
specifically when we get to Days of Future Past.
Yeah, yeah,
because First Class doesn't necessarily...
No. That's all prequel.
It's like prequel to like everything.
Yeah.
And it might contradict like a couple things. But it contradicts way less than X-Men Origins Wolverine does, which has Wolverine like saving Cyclops as a kid and shit.
Okay, so in Days of Future Past, they create two timelines, right? One is the dystopian timeline.
Okay.
Right.
Which is the one that Logan eventually goes into?
No. The one where they all get killed by Sentinels.
The one that we start off in.
Yeah, that's okay. The dystopian timeline. The alternate timeline, when they fix things, leads into Apocalypse, Dark Phoenix, and ends with Logan.
Okay.
Logan is the most distant future of the new timeline. Now, I haven't seen Dark Phoenix, so I don't know what happens there.
Damn, so all of the timelines end in tragedy.
Yeah, but the new timeline with Dark Phoenix, we know that... That's the thing. Like, we know she has to survive and then still be fine because we saw a snippet of the future in the end of Days of Future Past with the original cast.
True.
So I feel like they... I haven't seen Dark Phoenix. I feel like they contradicts stuff. Everything again.
Yeah, probably.
So there's probably three or more timelines, really.
Even though there's meant to be two.
Right. There's honestly a million timelines for all the different continuity errors that there are in these movies.
Maybe they're all variants.
That's probably the best way to...
The TVA is going to go nuts on the X-Men universe.
Here's the other thing. And I read this, that both these post-credit scenes... Or, you know, the Magneto ones, right?
Yeah.
Prior to the credits.
Oh, yeah. We haven't talked about the Magneto one yet.
Apparently, none of those were planned.
They were done just in case we make another movie.
No, they were, like, done in reshoots.
Oh.
So, like, they went out to London to find Ian McKellen, and they went out to a park and filmed
it. He's like, here, just sit here and pretend to move it with your mind.
Meanwhile, the Professor X one was filmed during, like, a lunch break.
What the fuck? The thing is, like, even though the post-credit scene... doesn't make any sense. It's interesting.
It's just to say that Professor X isn't really dead, but then it's what's the point of killing
Professor
him?
Professor X isn't dead and Magneto still has his powers.
So what's the franchise point of anything?
The franchise will continue.
Yeah, but what was the point of taking away his powers if it didn't work? And what's the point of killing off Professor X?
Also, what are the implications? Is it that the cure doesn't actually work?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe it doesn't work for the strongest mutants.
Or like maybe Magneto. It's temporary and you have to get booster shots.
I mean, Magneto, like, yeah, he can barely move that chess piece.
Right, but his powers are still there.
Also, why is he...
Also, in Days of Future Past, he's Magneto again, full powered.
Yeah, so they come back.
Yeah.
But, like, why is he just playing chess by himself? He's not playing with anybody.
He's sad.
Also, why is he the only one with metal pieces? He just takes his own pieces with him?
I could see him doing that. He seems like that type of guy.
Because those are plastic pieces in a public park.
Maybe they have metal in them.
No, his are metal.
Oh,
yeah, I don't know if you noticed, or like shiny.
He probably brought his own little pieces with him.
And no one will play with him, which is extra sad.
Aww.
Also, he was a televised terrorist. How can he just be like out and about and nobody recognizes him?
Because he's just an old man without powers.
Why isn't he in jail? Okay, well, that's the movie.
He should at least be in jail. But yeah, that's the movie.
That's the movie. Here we go.
Yikes.
So let's get into the analysis. And again, you know, when we kind of do the plot, we talk a lot in there, but like overall, this is a movie that could have really been something.
I was thinking this as I was watching it, and I was thinking it even more when we're talking about it. This is a movie that has a lot of bullet points of really good things, and then they just kind of like mention the bullet point and that's it.
That's a good way of putting it.
Like they don't go into depth in anything that was like interesting.
I think this might have been a very well-written movie. I think there's a script out there that, like, maybe it's, like, a complete story, you know, with, like, everything in it. And it hasn't been phased by the production woes, you know?
Yeah.
But there's definitely a lot of production that, like, got in the way of this.
It definitely seems like it.
We talked about it earlier. We were basically saying, like, you know, they had a time frame. They didn't delay the movie. Didn't matter what happened, they were going to hit that time frame. And so...
I guess they just wanted to capitalize on it while it was still hot. But yeah, I mean, it's just delay it a little bit.
It's just studio thinking. They don't care if the movie's good. The movie has to be made and has to make money.
Right.
That's all it is. And the creatives have to figure it out because deadlines.
Here's the thing, though. If you push it back a little bit, delay it, yeah, you're spending a little bit more money, but you might have a better movie that will not only get a good opening weekend, but might get good word of mouth that will keep people watching it throughout its theatrical run.
Absolutely.
And also, people will buy it when it comes out on, like, home video.
Yeah. And I think this a lot, but, like, I think more movies need to be delayed. If it doesn't work out, delay it. Make the best movie you can make. And I know from, like, management perspective, you know, if you set a deadline, you need to meet the deadline. Like, things will only get made in the amount of time you allow them to get made. If you give someone 2 weeks to paint your house, they'll take all 2 weeks to paint your house. You think they're going to paint it on the first day and be like, I'm done? No.
No.
You know what I mean? So, like, I see both sides, but at the same time, it's like, hey, here we are, like, 15 plus years on. Almost, we're knocking on 20 in a few years on this movie.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here going, like, this movie sucks.
It could have been better.
It could have been better. Like, maybe a few more months of, you know, you delay the movie 6 months, you compete with a different, you know, market or whatever. You make more money, you make a better movie, and we'd be talking about a better movie today that could have changed the entire trajectory of the X-Men franchise.
You might not have had to fix your timeline if your last movie in the trilogy wasn't so, like, poorly received.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, there are some really good things that this movie starts off with, and that's what lets me believe that there was a good script.
Just got, you know, all chopped up and...
Yeah. They didn't get to, like, we don't got time to film at all. We don't have time to get to these plot points. We have to write new plot points
to, like... We have, like, to find a director.
Yeah. To kind of connect the dots. You know what I mean? There's a part in this movie where they're like, hey, this is all we got. It's just us. And it's three experienced X-Men and, like, three newbies. And I'm like, part of me likes that. I'm like, that's kind of cool. And that, like... It's a ragtag team now. It's not the team that they had before. There's no Cyclops. There's no Jean. No Professor X. On the other side of that, I'm like, this is representative of this movie where they couldn't bring the band back together.
They literally couldn't.
And yeah, you're stuck. And this is what you got. This is the fucking team. Now what are we going to do? You know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I always also thought it was weird when they introduced, like, new major characters in, like, the third movie of a trilogy.
I'm just on that Beast. I love that guy. I love this character.
I do.
And Kelsey Grammer as Beast is flawless.
Grammer is flawless.
Yeah. I honestly think I'm like, this is the best version of this character. I don't really like the one from the prequels. I think he's all right. I don't think he's Beast. I look at this. I'm like, this is Beast in a nutshell.
Yeah.
They nailed it. And he looks exactly like he does in the comics.
And he acts like him.
Yeah. The suit that they put him in looks so good. Obviously, they goose him up. But he looks like just a large man. Like you put a bodybuilder in a suit.
That was all practical, right?
Apparently, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm saying you put a bodybuilder in like a three-piece tight suit, you know, and that's what you got. Yeah. That's what he looks like. Whereas I feel like the one in the prequels, he looks kind of like skinny in a way.
Well, I think he is skinny, though.
But he's... No, I'm not talking about the actor. I'm talking about Beast.
Oh.
When he's in Beast form.
Because I think it's just the actor Blue.
Yeah, but this isn't Kelsey Grammer. He's goosed up.
That's...
You see what I'm saying?
True. Yeah, he looks.
He looks like Beast, who is a large, hulking creature.
He's a beast.
Yeah. Whereas in the prequels, I don't feel like they nail it at all, even though they have way more resources.
I think they tried to just, like... They did a similar thing with, like, Mystique, where she's just never Blue.
Well, that's the other thing, is that, yeah, they're like, it's right away to not have to do makeup. But
yeah, it's like, we can do it, but we're not gonna.
Yeah, I think it's a great character. I wish we had spent more time with him. And yeah, to your point, I wish he was in an earlier movie.
Yeah.
And the other way around, too, like, we were kind of mentioning, should Nightcrawler have been in this? Like,
I would have loved that.
Maybe? He was such a part of the last film.
He had a surprising amount of character development in that movie, too.
Yeah, it would have been nice if, you know, that could have carried over, too. And then you wouldn't have had such a ragtag fucking team.
Him and Storm are like best friends now.
Yes, sure. I mean, you know, they have Kitty running through walls. They could have had...
Nightcrawler could have teleported them to Alcatraz.
Yeah.
Apparently there's a video game that explains why Nightcrawler is not in the movie.
Is there really?
It's called X-Men 3, the official game of the movie. That's the title.
Yeah. I saw that, 2006.
Yeah, it takes place like between 2 and 3, and you play as Wolverine, Iceman, and Nightcrawler.
Huh.
I've always wanted to play it. Never did. Maybe I'll find it at GameStop.
Interesting.
It's probably bad. It's a licensed movie game, but...
Yeah.
Although, the King Kong game is very good.
Really?
Yeah.
So, other things on this movie. Action's real meh. Kind of sucks. It seems like an afterthought.
It's borderline bad.
Yeah, it really seems like an afterthought in a lot of these scenes where they're just kind of like, hey, we forgot to write an action scene. Some action has to happen here. Mm. You know, there's a little bit when they fight to get into Jean's house, and then Wolverine goes on a random escapade and fights Spike.
And they stab each other.
They stab each other for a little bit. That's it. And then it's the end of the movie. That's kind of it. And I mean, the final battle, it's got some nice parts to it. Like, I appreciate that it is this big kind of battle between everybody.
They tried to do, like, a big epic battle. It's just kind of people running at each other and punching.
It's a lot of people who can jump really high.
And jump onto, like, towers and stuff.
Everyone just kind of jumped up at once. And I'm like, how many toads are there here now? Like, what is happening? There's a new score in this that's very generic.
It was forgettable because I can't remember any of the music.
And they should have 100% kept the themes from the first movie. There were some scenes where I'm like, this would work really well if you had kept the music from the first movie. I don't know why they wouldn't have
because
done that.
Because the theme for like the first and second movie, it's like kind of like iconic.
Yeah.
I want to say iconic.
No, absolutely. It's a great theme. And there's the part where like they put together the ragtag X-Men team. And they get on the jet, and it takes off, and it's like, oh, cool, we're heading into the third act. That would have been the moment. You put that theme there as the jet's flying
away.
Get
everyone hyped.
Oh, my God, it would have been so much better. Not in the movie.
Not good. Not rememberable in any way. Costumes were kind of more of the same. I liked when Iceman had, like, that leather jacket look, though.
Did you notice Multiple Man had Wolverine's jacket? It's, like, the same jacket.
There's a lot of cool leather in this movie.
No, but I'm talking about it's like literally the same jacket. It made me go like, notice. Why are you wearing that? So the prop department's like, this is all we got.
I thought he just liked leather. There's a lot of cool leather in this movie. Just like all the other X-Men movies.
A lot of edgy as fuck.
Yeah. The coolest looking character, I'm just going to say Iceman when he turns into Iceman. Like, that actually looked cool.
Yeah. I liked Hank's Beast
looked good.
Costume.
Beast looked good.
Because it almost seemed like more of a throwback to more orange and blue, to your point.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they were thinking, because he's like, oh, he's an original X-Men. He already retired from being an X-Men.
He's like the original X-Men.
Right. And he found his old costume because he's like, oh, this used to fit me, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And they make it like a little bit of a gag.
But, I mean, he's walking next to Wolverine, and you can see how their suits look different.
Yeah. Which is cool, because it shows that, you know, there's some history in this world.
Yeah.
They don't really touch on it.
No.
But it's there. And we see a little bit of the suits in First Class, sort of.
Yeah, sure. And they don't exactly match.
No,
Hank,
it's
but they're closer. Similar. Yeah, they're closer. But, yeah, there's just too many things in this movie that you can tell started out as great ideas and then just go nowhere.
Like all of Angel's plot.
Angel subplot. The whole mute. Okay, so if you think about this. The last movie we said, one of my favorite things about that, about X2, the plot just seemed very natural because they introduce a new concept, a new question, and then it's basically like, what's the natural progression that would happen in this situation? Okay. And then it just happens. And you don't question any of it because it's so well written.
Was it the mutant registration?
No, that was the first movie.
No, that was the first. What was the second one?
In the second one, you've got fucking What's-His-Face.
I know you have Stryker being
if
a
Stryker
dick.
Getting, we watched this movie a while ago.
It's been a while. Yeah, that's the thing.
Gonna attack the X-Mansion.
Oh, yeah.
And
he attacks the X-Mansion. He's like in the president's ear and stuff.
Yeah.
He's being an asshole, basically. He wants the white mutants out.
Yeah. But basically, like, you know, they introduce his character and then everything just kind of flows naturally. Mm-hmm. And this one, I feel like you introduced some really interesting concepts in the beginning and you wanted the movie to then flow from that, which is like, we've introduced a cure. What does that mean? What are the implications of that? Which characters are going to want it?
Is
what's
it something
Magneto
that should be cured?
It?
Are we a disease?
Yeah. What's Magneto going to do about it? Well, he's going to, for him, this is a final straw. He's going to start his war. You know, you've got, the love triangle with Rogue. Meanwhile, we're also doing the Phoenix Saga. So, like, you've got Professor X and his ethical debate that he's got going on. All these great things to kick off this movie, and then it all fizzles out because they didn't execute on any of these things.
They didn't follow up on any of it.
A lot of it just starts out in the beginning. It's a kind of a good first act, honestly, and then just kind of fizzles out after that, and then generic action scene, movie's over, right? And also, we killed Cyclops in one scene.
So, oh, X-Men 2 is a Cerebro plot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It just came back to me. The Cerebro genocide.
I think that's pretty much all I got for this.
No, yeah, like, I wish there was more to analyze in this movie.
Yeah, it's really not. It's pretty straightforward. It's
shallow.
Yeah.
Oh, what was it I said on our break? It's a very dense movie with nothing in it.
Yeah, we went on break and you said something really smart. You know, look at you. And now I'm
forgetting it.
Now everyone wants to party at my house. You said it's a very dense movie about nothing or something.
I think I said that, yep. Because it is. So, it's like there's a lot going on, but at the same time, it's like it's nothing.
Pretty much.
It's so weird. It's a mess.
Yep.
There's a lot of really great ideas just thrown into a pile of poop.
Yep.
Yep.
I'm with you there. All right, so this is Keep or Cancel.
All right.
This is a segment where we decide if the people in the movie should be kept or should be canceled. It's a play on cancel culture. You get it. It's a joke. So I thought what we did was when we did the first X-Men, we did Bryan Singer. Second X-Men, we did Patrick Stewart. Sirs, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McKellen.
Yes.
And now we're in the third one. I thought what we would do for this is just do a lightning round for all of the people left over.
Because there's quite a few.
There's a bunch.
Yeah.
Basically, all the people we're not going to touch up on later. Because there's a bunch. Like, we're going to get to Hugh Jackman. Don't you worry.
Oh, he's still got, have plenty of movies to get to him.
He has like six more movies that he's in. So
yeah,
we'll get there. But let's start with Brett Ratner, director of this movie. Just the grossest looking person I think I've ever seen.
He looks like a slime ball.
He is so slimy looking. Directed the Rush Hour films.
Which I like.
Some of which are good.
Two of three.
Also directed The Family Man, Red Dragon, this movie, Tower Heist. Fun fact about Tower Heist, you know, written by Eddie Murphy. Do you know the movie I'm talking about?
No.
It's like a comedy with Eddie Murphy and Ben Stiller. So basically, the idea from Eddie Murphy was that the movie was going to be titled Trump Heist. And it was about disgruntled employees of Donald Trump planning to rob Trump Tower, though references to Trump were later removed from the film. It's called Tower Heist.
Damn, that could have been kind of funny. That
could have been something.
Did they like get fired off of The Apprentice and they're like getting revenge?
I think it's one of those things where it's like, we have to get clearance for all these things. It's going to be very difficult.
And it's like, fuck it. We're not even going to try.
Trump sues everybody.
Which he would.
Let's not even get involved.
Yeah.
Well,
actually, yeah. I'm sure they would have had to jump through a lot of hoops, but they might have been able to get all that approved.
I feel like no.
No.
So this is lightning round. We're trying to go as fast as possible. 84th Academy Awards. That was the one in 2011. The Academy, blah, 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 announced Brett Ratner would produce the awards. However, Ratner later resigned after remarking that, and I quote,
can we say that on Twitch?
He said, rehearsal is for fags. And so he apologized, but he didn't do the thing because obviously
right,
that's a shitty ass thing to say. October 2017, during the Me Too movement, a former talent agency accused Ratner of rape. On November 2017, six women, including Olivia Munn, accused Ratner of sexual assault and harassment, as well as following an actress into a bathroom without invitation and masturbating as another entered his trailer to deliver food.
This is ridiculous.
It's going downhill fast, man. The same month, actor Elliot Page accused Ratner of sexual harassment and outing the then 18-year-old Page as gay on this movie, on set, in front of many onlookers, including Anna Paquin, who later confirmed the story. I remember when this happened.
Jesus
Christ. Former fashion model. Look, it gets bad. Oh, wait, that fashion model was 17.
That's real bad.
Yeah, dude, this... Also, Brendan Fraser said, was misled into posing for pictures with the intent on selling them as part of Ratner's planned book. It doesn't go into detail. I don't know if they were like sexy pictures.
He took pictures of Brendan Fraser and used them without permission.
Honestly, it's the least bad thing he's done according to all these other things. So, holy fucking shit, man. This
terrible person.
What a fucking sleaze. Like, I can't just look at this guy. Anyway, cancel. Let's move on.
Absolutely cancel him.
James Marsden. He was in the Saved by the Bell, the new class. He was like in an episode or two of that. You don't know Saved by the Bell, do you?
I know of it.
Obviously.
I never watched it.
Right. But. Obviously, he left this to do Superman Returns, a movie we're going to get to. It was in Enchanted. He was like that prince. He was
the prince. Yeah.
Hop.
I remember a fan theory saying that when Cyclops got disintegrated, he got transferred to the world of Hop.
The Hop universe. Yeah. The Hopiverse. Sonic the Hedgehog, where it's kind of the same thing as Hop. There's a lot of
he's parallels. Pretty good in Sonic.
I like him. I know I like Sonic, and I like him, and I'm excited for a sequel.
Yeah, I did like that movie.
He was in The Butler, Dead to Me, and 30 Rock. He was in a few episodes of 30 Rock. He was like a boyfriend or something.
Okay. James Marsden is he's.
I like him.
He seems like a cool guy.
He's kind of like seems like a generic dude, but like especially in his roles. But like I like him.
He's the Donut Lord in Sonic.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. All right, cool. Keep. Thamp Jensen. GoldenEye. You watch GoldenEye.
I love GoldenEye.
She's the one who kills people with her thighs.
Yeah, it's hot. She's hot.
Thick thighs and lives.
Literally, in this case.
Yes. Also, in the Taken trilogy, she's like the mom.
She's the mom that's always yelling at Liam Neeson.
She's a Nip Tuck. How to Get Away with Murder.
All right.
Here's a fun fact. She's a goodwill ambassador for the UN.
That's interesting.
That is interesting. So, Keep. I always had a little mini crush on her when I was a kid. She's same. Very pretty. She's
very pretty woman.
Very good looking. Halle Berry. We'll do her later. She's in a movie.
She's in a few other movies.
She's in Catwoman. What other movie is she in?
Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah, sure.
For a second.
Yeah, but Catwoman. Who else are we talking
she
about?
She is Catwoman. She's,
it's Catwoman, and who else is in that movie?
I don't remember.
The guy from Law and Order. The guy from Law and Order.
The main guy from Law and Order?
No, he's in one of the Law and Orders, isn't he? He's like a detective.
There's so many Law and Orders. Which one?
Oh my god.
SVU, Organized Crime, Criminal Intent.
Benjamin Bratt.
Benjamin Bratt. Oh. Is he the one that puts on the sunglasses and makes the puns?
No, that's from CIS.
Oh, wrong crime show.
Law and Order's the good show. Anyway.
In a criminal justice system.
Anyway. So Halle Berry, we're doing later. Kelsey Grammer.
He's Frasier.
Frasier Crane in Cheers and the spinoff Frasier. He's also Sideshow Bob in The Simpsons.
I didn't know that.
Which I didn't know, but now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, that is him. Hmm. But he puts on a slightly different voice. It's not the same Frasier.
No.
I love Sideshow Bob. He's great. Stinky Pete in Toy Story 2.
Okay.
Yeah, he's done a lot of voice acting also. Also has had a prolific theater career. Played Othello, Sunday in the Park with George, Sweeney Todd, The Color Purple, Don Quixote.
Don Quixote.
That's all I got on him, so keep.
Yeah, Kelsey Grammer's cool. I've always liked Kelsey Grammer.
I like him a lot. I didn't watch Frasier, and everyone's like, oh, what? You should watch Frasier.
Frasier's great. It's way better than Cheers. One of the spinoffs that's better than the original.
Yeah, I've seen episodes of Cheers. But I've never seen a single thing from Frasier.
When they walk in the bar and everyone's like, hey.
Yeah. Rebecca Romijn, formerly known as Rebecca Romijn Stamos, because she was married to John Stamos.
Uncle Jesse himself.
Started as a model for obvious reasons. She's beautiful.
Yes.
She was in Austin Powers, where she played herself. And then a movie called Femme Fatale with Antonio Banderas, where she plays a femme fatale. Which is honestly kind of like right up her alley, because
that's what Mystique is.
Obviously, Mystique is a femme fatale, yeah. We're going to see her again because she's in The Punisher, the one with Thomas Jane.
Okay, that's the one I've seen before.
Yeah. She's in that.
And,
she's the girl.
What's his face? He's crazy now from Grease.
Yeah.
John Travolta.
She's also voiced Lois Lane several times in a bunch of different DC things, like animated things.
Like the shows?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
okay.
Like movies. Like the animated stuff.
Okay.
Like
the Bruce Timm stuff?
No, not the old stuff. The new stuff.
Oh, okay. Newer. Okay.
Yeah. And then Star Trek. She's in the newer Star Trek shows.
Okay.
So, Keep.
Yeah, Keep. There's Keep. Nothing wrong with her. She was married to John Stamos. He's a little weird.
Is he a little weird?
He seems a little weird.
A little off.
A little bit. Not, like, nuts, but, like, a little bit, like, he's done some odd things.
I have a strange mistrust for, like, handsome actors who have stayed just as handsome as they get older.
Yeah, what are they doing?
Like, what's Rob Lowe up to? He looks the same.
What about Paul Rudd?
But Paul Rudd is so lovable, though. But Rob Lowe and John Stamos. I feel like they're like they're.
Who else? I feel like there's one more.
They're doing witchcraft or something, like, because they're like.
Did John Stamos make a deal with the devil?
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're still very handsome guys.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem right.
And they're like pushing 60.
Yeah,
it's not right.
It's strange.
It's not right.
It's strange.
Sean Ashmore. Animorphs.
When I saw X-Men for the first time, I was like, that's the guy from Animorphs.
Same. I was already into Animorphs. I was really into Animorphs. I read all those books. They should remake those. The fact that they haven't yet.
I heard that they were going to do like a movie or something. I don't know how that's going.
They should
remake. Book series is fantastic, though.
They should remake them.
They should.
Voice Iceman in a couple things, too. So he kind of reprises himself. He was in Superhero Squad show. It's like a little kids show.
Okay.
And also, like, the video game and a couple other things.
He is a starring role in a video game, actually, where they actually use, like, his likeness, and he's, like, does motion capture acting and everything.
Oh, cool. What game?
Quantum Break.
Oh. Okay.
I think it's Sean Ashmore. I hope it's not his brother.
He has a twin brother.
He has a twin brother. I don't think it's his brother, though. I think it's Sean.
They don't look that much alike. Like, his twin brother's the guy in Lock and Key.
Yeah.
A couple other things.
Sean Ashmore is definitely the one in the game that I'm thinking about.
A bunch of small movies, including Mother's Day, Frozen, not that Frozen. A different Frozen, Devil's Gate. He's also in a few episodes of The Boys.
Yeah, and he has fire powers in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen The Boys. That's so funny. I like Sean Ashmore.
I think he's cool. I've always liked him, too.
Yeah, from Animorphs. He needs bigger roles. I think he's pretty good.
I think he's underrated.
Yeah, sure. Vinny Jones, soccer player, first and foremost. Played for Wimbledon, Leeds United, Chelsea, and a couple other clubs. Gained a notorious reputation as an aggressive player.
Slide tackling everyone.
I think he was like punching people and grabbing people by the nuts and shit. Well,
that's
like,
a little bit more than aggressive. That's flat out unsportsmanlike.
Oh, yeah. Like, he was suspended many times. He kind of was pushing this like kind of like hard man. That's what they call it.
A heel.
Persona. And it's like kind of frowned upon in soccer nowadays, especially in England. Because it's like, it shouldn't be a violent game.
No, it's ain't hockey.
Yeah. and so after that, he got typecasted as kind of like, he really leaned into it as like a thug and a criminal. Yeah. From Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels.
Okay.
You see that movie?
No.
He's a criminal. he's also a criminal in Snatch. Which
is he a criminal in Gone in 60 Seconds also?
Yeah, they're all criminals in Gone in 60 Seconds.
He could have been the good guy.
Eurotrip. As himself, basically, he plays a football hooligan.
I saw that movie somewhat recently, so
yeah, we watched it together, right?
No,
yeah.
No, you watched it with Sable.
Oh, I think we watched it.
We talked about it.
I think then you watched it.
We watched a scene of it together.
Oh,
the Scotty doesn't know part,
yeah. So, too violent while playing soccer. So, I think I'm gonna cancel him as a soccer player and maybe keep him as an actor.
That's fair because. Yeah, he seems like a very unsportsmanlike athlete, but...
There's also it's been drugs and more violence and... Maybe just cancel all around.
Maybe just cancel him.
Bye. I got last, not least, I just kind of did this in random order, Elliot Page.
Okay.
Formerly known as Ellen Page, was in Trailer Park Boys, Juno. It's a good movie.
That is a good movie.
Whip It.
That's a good movie, too.
Super.
That's a great movie by James Gunn.
Yes. It's been on my list. I need to watch it. Inception was great in
another fantastic movie.
I loved him in Inception. The Umbrella Academy. Did you watch The Umbrella Academy?
I haven't seen it yet.
I saw season one and I really liked it. There was a couple things that made me uncomfortable. Kind of adult. It's kind of like super rated R, that show.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's based on a comic. I know that.
Uh-huh. The Umbrella Academy.
Yes.
And it's written by the guy from My Chemical Romance.
The comic is?
Yep. He wrote that.
Oh, shit. That's interesting.
Well, one of the guys. I don't know.
One of the guys.
I think it might be the lead.
The front man?
Yeah. The Umbrella Academy. Season one, I didn't see season two, and I think there's a season three planned.
Okay.
Obviously, came out gay,
Thanks to Brett Ratner.
Way
fucking
to go.
Asshole.
Way to go, you dick. But just like a year ago or so, transitioned and is now a man.
A man named Elliot.
Elliot. So, nothing to talk about like... trans people, that'd be weird.
Right.
What is interesting, I think, this brings us this debate about who should portray whom, right? Because a lot of people, and I mean, Maybe this is a debate for another day. When we get talk about like representation and casting and whitewashing, because there's other movies that we're going to kind of dip into these topics. Right. But there is, I feel like, a range of actors, and it depends on whether you're talking about race, whether you're talking about sexual orientation or gender, on what kinds of actors can play what kinds of roles.
It is an interesting question to ask about this.
Yeah, and I think it depends on which of those things you're looking at.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it depends on, oh, and also disabilities. So like,
yeah,
you know, like who can play certain kinds of disabled people? You know what I mean? And it makes me think of Tropic Thunder because they make fun of this.
The Simple Jack?
Yep. Where he's like, you can't, well, it's in the movie. They make fun of it, but they're like, you can't go all the way. You know what I mean? Like all these people that won awards, they didn't go.
Never go all the way.
That's not what they say.
We're censoring ourselves.
You know what I'm talking about? Yes. It is. I mean, that movie does a really good job of making fun of a lot of Hollywood things.
Including
whitewashing.
Whitewashing, yeah.
So
blackface to an extent. Well,
yeah, exactly. So, and method acting and all this shit. Method acting,
yeah. And I mean, is it okay?
I mean, obviously,
it's not.
RDJ got nominated for an Academy Award for all that, so.
And but it's a hilarious movie.
I saw a lot of topics here because, you know, in this show, Elliot Page, and I mean, he did it when he was still outwardly a female, right?
Right.
As Ellen Page, and plays a straight girl.
Right.
And has like a boyfriend sort of in the first season.
Mm-hmm.
Ends up being the bad guy. It's a good show. But now like there's talk about like, well, do they need to rewrite that character so that character transitions?
Not necessarily. Like,
I get all of the debate about representation, but it's also kind of like, this is an established story.
Yep. And it's a role that he's already playing.
Yeah. And now what are you saying about Elliot Page's now range of an actor?
Right.
Like, still an actor, still can do the roles he was doing before. So it's kind of like, what are you know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like, would he still want to do that role, or does he want to play males now?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, so...
Because I don't really have an answer, because I don't know.
No, I mean, it's very interesting to think about, though.
And it's something that I haven't seen before. Again, like...
It's just, I don't think it's a thing that's happened before.
No, honestly. So... history.
Because that show is still ongoing, so they're gonna have to get to it in some way.
They're gonna have to address this in one way or another.
And it seems to me... I mean, I don't know. I'm not there. I'm not the producers of that show.
I do think they've retroactively changed his name in the credits, which is a nice thing to do.
Oh, like on Netflix? I mean, it's on Netflix. It's
yeah,
streaming.
They can do that. Like,
they can do that, yeah.
They can't do that in, like, this movie.
Sure. But it's interesting, and I feel like, and maybe how that's how they're treating the situation, they're very understanding and open-minded or whatever, but, like, will they try to... I feel like, well, they're just going to kind of put it in his hands and be like,
What do you want to do?
What do you want to do? Do you want to reprise this role? Do you want to keep it female? Do we want to write this into the show? What do we want to do? Like, do you want to wear a wig because you don't have long hair? Do you want to go back to, like, portraying female? Like, what do you want to do?
Like, is it going to be weird for you to do this, or are you cool with it?
What kind of roles do you want? And again, like, actors, and I still kind of believe, like, actors got to act.
Yeah.
Like, there is, you know, as far as whitewashing goes and representation, all that is very important, but at the same time, it's like, you know, if you've got a blind person, you can't necessarily find a blind actor. There's not really any of those. Maybe there are a couple.
Maybe.
But you know what I'm saying? And at some point, like, your actor's got to act.
Yeah.
So...
Donnie Yen plays a pretty good blind person.
Oh, yeah.
And so does Charlie Cox.
Charlie Cox, that's right.
Ben Affleck, not so much.
So, all interesting thing, I think.
Yeah.
But, great actor. Mm-hmm. And one of those where I look at the filmography and I'm like, I like all his stuff.
I like pretty much everything he's been in.
I could watch Inception again, honestly. And I should probably watch Super. So, keep.
I like Super. Yeah, keep.
Keep.
Super is dark, though.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So, I think that's... Is that everybody I got here?
For X3?
I think for X-Men in general. There's a couple other people I wanted to do, but I didn't.
Did we talk about Alan Cumming?
Alan Cumming, I deleted Brian Cox. You got something on Alan Cumming?
He's cool.
Okay, cool.
He was in Spy Kids.
Spy Kids. I knew you were going to say Spy Kids.
He played Floop.
Cool. That's it. That's it for Keeper Cancel. Let's move on. Into the Phantom Zone. This movie. X-Men. The Last Stand. It's like, you know what? It should have been called X3. They called the last one X2.
Exactly.
This is stupid.
It's confusing. But yeah, I'm going to have to put this one in the Phantom Zone. The bad far, far, far outweighs the good because the good is barely there.
Okay.
It's like sprinkled in there. I'm not a fan.
No.
No.
I'm really on the fence.
Really?
Because this movie has some good moments. It has some really good...
You spent like 2 hours shitting on this movie.
No, I said it had a lot of good ideas that started out really well and then just kind of fizzled into nothing. This movie is too short. And the thing is like by the time you finish watching the movie, I'm kind of stuck with the things that I liked about it. And I'm starting to forget the things that I didn't like about it. And that happens sometimes when after you turn it off, you know, you're just kind of like, oh, yeah, that thing. Well, yeah. And I think that's how I feel about this film. Every time I watch it, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's not very good. But then like later, I'm like, yeah, but they had some really good ideas in there.
That you know, they didn't do anything.
I know. Maybe I'm overly forgiving. But I think final decision, I am putting it in the Phantom Zone because it is a fumble. Like, it fumbles all these good ideas.
Right. All these good ideas should be made into a different movie.
I think this movie could have been salvaged had it been delayed, had they had written it a little bit better. And it might have been written great. Like I said, there might be a really good script out there. I think it
could have been the best of the trilogy.
I think it could have done a really good job of tying up loose ends, providing us good...
ethical questions.
Full character arcs for some of these characters, like Cyclops.
Oh, yeah.
at least Wolverine with Jean. Yeah, the ethical questions brought up by Professor X, where he's basically the villain of the movie. So, it's still Phantom Zone. But, again, there really could have been something here, and it's so sad that a trilogy has to fizzle out like this.
Yeah. So, you like Phantom Zone? Asterisk?
Yeah, man, it's about to climb out. It's clawing at the door. But
like a General Zod.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, that's pretty much it for us, you guys. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for subscribing. Thanks to that piano dude for our musical intro. Make sure you leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever else you can leave rating or reviews on.
If you're on Spotify, it's not really a rating or review, but, you know, hit that little download button. I think that helps us.
Yeah. If you're subscribed, you'll just get our episodes.
Yeah, just subscribe to our show on Spotify.
There you go. Please tell a friend. And if you told a friend, thank you for telling that friend. Go make some more friends and then tell those friends.
Yeah.
You can find us on Instagram at Films from the Phantom Zone. And you can find us on Twitter if you want to have arguments. We're there. Films from PZ.
And you can at us.
Yeah, don't. I mean, shit.
Yes. Do at us.
Yeah, do an at.
Yell at us.
Yep. We're also on TikTok, also at Films from PZ. You can listen to all our episodes on YouTube if that's how you like consuming podcasts. Hey, work from home, listen to us.
Subscribe.
Oh, yeah, like, subscribe. Bell icon, is that what you say?
Bell icon so you can get notifications when we release new videos.
Yeah. Also, guys, if you want to be a part of the show, you can do that. We stream all these episodes live when we record them. Our recording sessions, unpolished, they're unkept.
They're uncensored.
They're uncensored. Sometimes people barge in and play pranks on us.
And we could say whatever the hell we want.
Jizz. Anyway. what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So we stream these on most Monday nights on Twitch. So that's twitch.tv/filmsfrompz. There's some chatting going on. There's some alcohols being drunk. It's a good time. So if you want to be a part of the show, hang out with us. That's how you do it. Other than that, I think that's pretty much it. What movie are you doing next time, Birdo?
Is it Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Ooh.
It's Amazing Spider-Man.
It's Amazing Spider-Man. Or is it The Amazing Spider-Man?
It's The Amazing.
The Amazing Spider-Man. TASM. 2012.
Right. And that is, says here on DirecTV.
That, what?
TNT, TBS, and True TV, if you're subbed to any of those things.
True TV.
I don't know how true
these
that
are weird places for that movie,
yeah,
to be.
Yeah, Sony. I don't know how True TV any of that is. So you can rent it if you don't already own it. It's a pretty popular movie. But we are starting our Spider-Man watch because there's Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah. Before you get too excited, we're not doing the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies just yet.
No, it does much later. So we're going to do Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2 in preparation for Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yep. I'm excited about those. That's my favorite superhero.
Spider-Man, really?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's not my favorite, but
my absolute favorite. since I was an infant.
Wow. All right, cool. Well, we will see you guys then. Thank you and goodbye.
Bye.